Hey, Kev.
Yeah?
Do you have an iPhone, Android, or smartphone? You got an iPhone.
You must be watching me. I do have one of these devices you're talking about.
Well, if you do,
yeah, I do.
Here is the most innovative accessory for your smartphone.
What is it?
It's called FlyGrip.
This is actually an ingenious device, dude. I use this. It's this little plastic thing. They stick to the back of your smartphone. Like, it has an adhesive, so it sticks to the back and essentially becomes this sweet-ass little handle that you can wear like a fucking ring. Like, it's not a ring that closes. But see how you put your two fingers in here? And then what it allows you to do is you can be kind of hands-free when you're doing shit on your phone. It's the best thing that's ever happened to me. And I have a child, so take that as you will.
Did you show it to her?
No, man. I wouldn't want her to get jealous. Yeah, I was like, this is your new brother. The FlyGrip is like a brother to you.
And a son to me.
Yeah. I love you, FlyGrip. Let's go fishing. FlyGrip. I could go fishing with FlyGrip. I would now literally take my phone on the high seas if you wear the FlyGrip.
Because
it ain't going anywhere.
It ain't gonna drop
unless a shark bites your hand off, in which case my FlyGrip can save you. But here's another use for FlyGrip. You fall off the boat. Sharks are circling. Rather than fucking get, you know, nobody, every once in a while you hear a story about a dude who jumps on a shark's fucking back or something like that.
Yeah,
crazy. Can't hold on to a shark. You got a FlyGrip. That shark whizzes past you. Pull the adhesive off. Slap right onto his fin.
Ride it.
Ride that fucker right to the shore. Ride it right up onto the beach where he beach him. The whole crowd goes fucking nuts. Chicks are like taking their tops off because you rode a shark onto the beach. They're like, how? What kind of man god are you? And you're just like, FlyGrip, bitch. FlyGrip. FlyGrip.com.
That usage not recommended by the makers of FlyGrip.
Go to FlyGrip.com, man. And if you enter the promotion code Iggy, I-G-G-Y,
yep,
they're going to give you free shipping. And if you act now, a free phone case.
Nice.
Motherfucker, free phone case, though, man. All you need,
is
the FlyGrip. You don't even need friends anymore. You just need the FlyGrip.
That's your friend.
The FlyGrip will be there
FlyGrip.
For you. Yeah. Why don't people understand me, FlyGrip?
It's me, Margaret.
FlyGrip.com. Welcome to Smodcast. I'm Kevin Smith.
And I'm Kevin's mom, Grace.
That's right. As Grace, as my mom is here. My mom's, as I tease, she's back again with the dirt. We're going to get down to the nitty gritty of it. But before we go there, sometimes it helps us take journeys into deep and wonderful places and embrace passionate memories of our past when we're stoned. You're not a stoner by any stretch of the imagination, and you never have been. I haven't been historically up until the last year. And it's something that you had to, as a mother, come to terms with. And I'm sure at first you were very like, what the fuck? No. And then, you know, you got educated and you were like, oh, my fucking kid's happy. Good for him.
Absolutely.
That's kind of what it was. You got educated and you were just like, this is, how could I be against anything that, like, this fucking dude, he's so sweet. He phone calls now. He's, you know, he writes. It lets you. What I say about weed is it creates time. For me, it creates time. A lot of people say it's a time, you know, bandit, because you get stoned and you're like, what did I want to do? And the whole day has gone by. But I get very active when I'm stoned and energetic. And I just kind of treat weed more like cigarettes. I used to treat cigarettes, but, you know, nobody's ever died from smoking weed. So I treat it more like that, where I just kind of smoke and then go about my task and then smoke and go about my task. But it tends to make me more task-oriented and whatnot. And so hence I come off the most productive year of my professional career, yet it was the one through which I was blitzed. I remember everything specifically, but, you know, I was joyfully fucking stoned throughout. And
unbeknownst to me, but I would prefer that you'd be happier and less smoking of cigarettes.
Yeah.
That are definitely going to get you those. I find that you're still in complete control. You're not just going to lay down on the couch and take five and just let the day go by and say, okay, then I'll get up later on and I'll have something to drink or something.
Right.
No, it's not the traditional quote-unquote stoner that, you know, it's just the whole life, okay? We drink whatever.
The way the media has portrayed it.
Right.
And demonized it.
Really?
Yeah.
And well, some people, that's the way they are when they utilize it because they can't handle it.
Or totally. Look, it's like anything else. It's a tool. And some people, a hammer in the hands of a carpenter can build you a house, but a hammer in the hands of a psychopath will open your skull. You
right.
know, it's
that's
like, it's
sure.
whatever hand it falls into, it's all about the user. It's not about the fucking.
Right. And it just
it's
goes
the person
to,
that holds the gun, not the gun itself.
To show that media isn't always right in the portrayal of certain things. They go after.
They'll sell you
the
cigarettes that will kill you, and they'll sell you right. booze that'll kill you, but they won't fucking sell you weed that does nothing but makes you. The worst thing it does is maybe it affects your productivity, but the best thing it does is it makes you just open to the human experience, way more open to the human experience than most of the people are. But you're not a smoker, and you never have been, not cigarettes or anything like that.
No.
Aunt Virginia was a big smoker. Uncle
well,
Mike was a big
were,
smoker. Uncle
right.
Joe, Uncle Andy.
Yeah.
Grandma was not, and Grandpa was not.
No,
a lot of, I mean,
never.
You live on a concoction, a cocktail of how many prescriptions do you take?
On the average of about 12 to 15 daily. Sometimes
separate prescriptions?
Several times during the day. I take the cocktail of hydrocodone for my back, and there's a Cordopa levodopa for the restless leg syndrome, a new one, Flexrol, they give me to try to calm the pain down.
Mm-hmm.
And on top of that, you take an over-the-counter, you know, Tylenol. Make the cocktail and hope to God my stomach lasts.
Unbelievable. So I used to be like, oh, I can't fucking, you know, force weed on my mother because, you know, she's not her virgin system. But my God, you live on a concoction of real hardcore drugs. I wonder if a joint would even affect you on any level. I think you'd smoke it and be like, nope, got nothing. Yeah. But you're not a smoker, so I got some edibles. And so what we're going to do is we're going to have –
today is the day of my birthday.
The rebirth day
right.
is what's happening today.
Okay.
So we're going to have some lovely red velvet weed cake.
Definitely.
And now we get to see how it affects you. We'll see if it affects you at all.
Okay.
And if it's something that you dig.
What time of day is it now?
It is 2:21.
God, boy.
So back where you're from, it's 5:21.
The day's gone already on us in my last day.
That's what we stoners like to do. It's 2 o'clock. Day's over.
Yeah.
That's the end of the day. It's a pretty decent work day.
We got a lot to accomplish yet today.
No, now we relax, Ma.
Oh,
we relax. Okay. So you and Dad are dating for how long? About a year, you figure?
About a year, I think. And like I said, then he was thinking, you know, he'd take me home. Of course, at that time, I said that was perfectly all right. You would never think anything would ever happen like these poor ladies nowadays.
Were you at all interested, too?
Yeah.
Where you were just like, I'll let him take me home because I think he's interesting?
Yeah.
Or like if he was a chud, you'd be like, ah, it's all right. I'll take the bus.
If he was a what?
Chud, like if he was not good looking.
No, he was good looking. He really was.
Now, he's not here to tell his story, so we got to do a little bit of his backstory in order to get to our present story eventually.
Okay.
Dad was born with a hair lip and a cleft palate, correct? Yeah. What year is he born?
1936, May 22nd.
Now, that's May 22nd, 1936. You're born with a hair lip and a cleft palate. You got problems because they didn't have anything back
then.
He's
the firstborn child to your grandparents who were very young at the time. Your grandmother was only, I think, maybe 20-something or 21 or something. I forget her age exactly. But that's scary. That was very scary. That was overwhelming to her. Now she has a child. They have no money.
Mm-hmm.
And this child needs help and everything like that. Along came a doctor that wrote up your father in a book I have. Dr. Pierce, I think it is.
Hawkeye Pierce?
No. In North City Hospital.
Right.
That would take a chance and was going to operate on him somewhat. So not as perfect.
To do what?
To close up the opening in the roof of his mouth that gave him the cleft palate. The hair lip was the front of his face.
Let's do this real quickly for those that aren't
completely
familiar with either of these concepts or terms. Hair lip is where your lip doesn't fully form. You could see a seam of sorts. It almost gives a little bit of a lift, kind of an Elvis-like lift. What's his name? The actor has one.
Stacy Keach.
okay, maybe your generation would know who that is. You got to go something more like Joaquin Phoenix. He has a hair.
Oh, really? That's right. He does.
So, you know, that's dad's was far more egregious than yeah. Joaquin's, though, from what I understand. I've seen a picture. It's just almost like the lip is sewn to the nostril or something. You know, yeah. It's just weird. And then inside, cleft palate means that
he has a hole in the roof of his mouth
that never formed while he was in utero.
Right.
When he came out, there's a hole in the roof of his mouth. And my father's parents, we only knew as they weren't, I wouldn't call them stern. They were just completely fucking disinterested in our family. Yeah. The legend has it, like, dad was a house bug who lived at home until age 28 when he married you. At age 18, is that right? 29? No, 20. He was 29.
Nine years different.
So 29.
Right. Correct.
He's 29. He's been living at home until he's 29, and they're all used to, you know, Don being the guy that is home, and that's the way it is. Brings beer on paydays
for his father. Brings mama's boy,
and you can always be counting on to be around. suddenly, he meets a chick, and he's like, "I want to get married," and then they're just like, "Ugh." Fuck him, fuck them, and fuck the kids. For some reason, I
was too young, and they felt that I was taking advantage of him because he was buying me things.
They thought you were a gold digger.
Yeah.
They didn't know there was little or no gold to be dug.
Right.
Gold digger. It's like, who do you think this dude is?
He had a brand new 1963 Chevy Supersport car, white Impala.
Right.
With the hubcaps and the red interior leather and the white car and everything like that.
Oh, my God. Were you like a car whore? Is that what did it for you?
He taught me how to drive.
He taught you how to drive. And you're like, all right, I'm going to teach you some things, Don.
Stop it.
At what point do you really start to fancy him? What part do you go like, oh, I do like this guy and I hope it works out. I hope he asks me out on a regular basis, or I'm thinking about marrying this person.
Well, he used to bring me home from a date and he'd always say, his famous line was, I'll give you a ring on the telephone.
Yeah, that was his line? That was a joke.
Yep. I'll give you a ring.
What a terrible line. On
the
telephone.
He constantly would call me, you know, all the time in the morning and in the evening. Grandma would go like, what do you have to talk about so much, you know?
If a 26-year-old guy was calling my 17-year-old daughter.
You would worry.
I would call the police, I think.
But see, I was more mature. I was 17.
You were racier?
We trusted the honesty and the integrity of your father, too, being a gentleman.
What do you mean?
That I would go out and date with him, and Grandma didn't really worry.
How naive were they, man? Like, what the fuck?
No, they
looks like lambs to the slaughter.
Background. The things weren't always just sex and black and white.
Yes, they were.
Not in my generation.
What was it?
It was enjoyment. He taught me how to bowl. Is that all it took back in the day to teach you how to bowl and teach you how to drive a car? Yeah.
But based on your standard, I should be married to Ernie O'Donnell. Ernie taught me how to drive. Is that all it took? I'm like, thanks, sir. And here's my mouth and my ass for the rest of my life. Okay. So they, for some reason, your parents are really, lax, and they let this 26-year-old dude.
Let's put it this way: you could put a better word is accepting.
Did you have to ever fight with him about it?
Everything.
No. Did you ever have to be like they were
no.
just like?
Oh. Actually, he came in to talk to my dad one time. Your dad about taking me out, you know, and dating and such. He asked permission, in other words, and he actually asked permission for when we got engaged.
So this dude, I'm sorry, we jumped ahead. This dude, born with a hair lip and a cleft palate, they do this surgery on him when he's a baby.
Yeah, when he was a baby, they did some, they did the more corrective on his lip when he was 12 years old, a terrible summer that he spent with his mouth sewed up and only a little room for a straw to feed.
And it's an early form of cosmetic surgery.
Right.
Like the earliest.
Very earliest.
Trying to do the kid a favor.
Yeah.
But, you know, fucking, they were still perfecting it, and so he spent all summer
with his mouth sewed up. He didn't know what he was going to look like because they had to take skin grafts from another part of his body to build the lips to make them and everything. And he didn't know what he was going to look like. And he always told me the story that he wanted to get a hold of a mirror and see what he looked like, and the nurse wouldn't let him. But he did finally get one, and he almost tried to pull everything off because he was still bloated, his face, from the surgery, and then only having a little slit open for a straw so that he could drink milkshakes until they could heal that to take the stitches out. So you could see that was like their first step into plastic surgery.
But still, poor little fucking 12-year-old kid who's written up. There's a picture of a medical journal and this case study. Okay, so he goes through that procedure at 12, kind of turns him into a bit of an introvert, little shy dude, because, you know, he's had the corrective surgery on the face.
That's why I belong to this Smile Train organization for in memory of Dad that we donate all the time, you know, like we sold some of his records, things like that. I want to donate more to them because these children.
It's for kids with cleft palates and shit.
Cleft palate and hearing lips.
Really?
One like that. Unbelievable.
I'll donate a bunch of stuff.
That'd be great.
To that
organization. That'd be wonderful.
Yeah, you like that.
It's called the Smile Train. And,
I'm a saint.
As a matter of fact, I have
just
some
a goddamn
paperwork.
Goddamn saint with
me.
Of a son.
Yes, you
I'm
are.
Such a good son. Tell me I'm good.
You are.
I'm
wonderful. I admire kidding. Because I have seen in the office in Red Bank all the places that you do give charity to.
I was not talking about that this gauche, but I was just kidding. So he eventually gets his corrective surgery as he can. You guys meet, regardless of this hair lip, you find him interesting and attractive and sexy. And the biggest factor of all, he taught you how to fucking drive. And that immediately means you have to surrender your whole life to a person.
No.
At what point does he pop the question?
1963. December 25th, Christmas.
63?
But he told me before time, so we went to pick out the ring. And that's when he gave me the ring, after midnight mass. We got engaged Christmas Eve.
1963?
After midnight mass.
After midnight mass. Where? How's he do it?
Got down on his knee.
Where?
In grandma's living room.
After midnight mass, so 1 in the morning?
Yeah, with the Christmas tree lit up and we're all alone and he asked me and marry him. Matter of fact,
so
I was
beautiful.
Wearing my poodle skirt, a poodle skirt that you used to wear back then.
You better start eating more cake. this could be the best modcast of all time. Don't you get it? Like, you could get so fucking stoned that you make a pass at me and it's all on the record.
We'll delete that from the sentence.
You're like, son, I would never make a pass at you. I had a higher standard. I married a thin guy. You married a very thin guy.
Very thin.
Yeah, he was
no,
a fucking rail.
All the time?
Yeah, well,
he
yeah.
He paid Uncle Alan to hold it, you know, his
feet,
feet
to, so he could do sit-ups and shit. Whenever I think about him on the floor, instead of thinking about sit-ups, because I remember he used to do those at home sometimes too. He used to lay on the floor, and again, this is back in the days when TV had like 6 channels only, and a television set was this massive wooden box with a tiny little screen in the middle of it. More decorative furniture than anything else, more a furniture piece than a television. He would lay on the floor, and I would lay on top of his
belly
like a pillow,
yeah.
And watch Bowling for Dollars and shit like
right.
that. Good dude.
They were probably
so anyway,
the greatest, happiest days of his life when he
no
was,
doubt. That's
he
really
was,
all he wanted. He just wanted yep. to get married and have kids. I mean, it's
that's
kind
all.
Of a beautiful sentiment and whatnot. I remember I asked him one day, you know, like, Dad, what were your dreams? What did you dream about doing and whatnot? And he was like, what are you talking about? What does that mean? Stop asking me that. And I think it was just like, what, are you retarded? It was obvious. It was to get married and have kids. Like, that was my dream. Like, he didn't want for anything else. He was never like, one day I'm going to be a country and western singer.
Nope.
He just wanted to get married and have kids. Like, that was his big goal in life, and he accomplished it, and he was so
take
happy
him on vacation
it.
And learn.
He did. You guys took us a
them.
Million plays I've talked about on Smodcast in the past. Many places in that we didn't even have a right to go because we couldn't even afford it necessarily. Yep. I mean, considering that dude worked as a postman's salary.
Right.
One income family for most of our lives. But anyway, before all that, you guys are dating for a year. You get married, you're 18, and he is 27.
Correct.
I finally got the math right.
You got
right.
the math right.
Thank you. I'm getting better. See? And I'm
see?
More progressively stoned.
Right.
Once again, kids, smoke. It makes you smart. I tell the kids, I'm like, don't start until you're 38. That's what
right.
I did. Build
absolutely.
Your empire and fucking smoke
absolutely.
It away. The kids, as if they're listening. Kids are like, who are you, old man, old fat man? Are you Burl Ives?
Oh,
who are you?
That's at Christmas time. Frosty the Snowman.
I don't even know names like that anymore. I was thinking the other day, there's so many names from my childhood. Peggy Fleming.
Oh, yeah.
Why did you like Peggy Fleming? Peggy Fleming, for this the entire audience listening, who is
Olympic
like,
skater.
Would never fucking know who the fuck she was.
Yep.
She was an Olympic skater who became a figure skater.
Right.
So she
gorgeous.
Would be like Peggy Fleming in the ice capades
gorgeous.
And shit like
that's
that.
That's what I wanted. I had ice
you always say I she was gorgeous. She was gorgeous. What does that mean?
Beautiful looking woman.
Yeah.
As a matter of fact, she was on a commercial just recently.
Yeah,
right.
Really?
And they brought her out.
She's aged
yeah,
well?
Yes. But
she's
also
a, MILF?
A product of cancer.
Oh. So that's why they brought her out.
Right.
No.
And
but they were bringing out to be like, look
survivor,
how good she looks.
I'm sorry, survivor of
survivor.
Cancer is the best way of saying
product
survivor.
Of cancer.
Well, they got her, in other
it
words.
Grew her in a
and
lab. No wonder she was so fucking good
here she
on
was.
The ice. But speaking of Peggy Fleming, mm-hmm. Peggy Fleming, you're so into this ice skater.
She was an Olympic.
Years later, I get into Wayne Gretzky.
Isn't that something?
A hockey skater. There is now a show that exists up in Canada called Battle of the Blades, where they pair up a figure skater and an old hockey player.
Way.
Yes, and it's kind of like Dancing with the Stars, ice skaters and hockey stars.
Oh, I'd love to see that.
The episode you and I would love together and probably just come watching would be Peggy Fleming teamed up with Wayne Gretzky.
Right.
You know, doing it to an Olivia Newton-John song for you.
Right. For me.
And, you know, either a Sting song or, you know, Run DMC for me. But I thought that was so ironic. I was thinking, wow, it's so weird. Mom was into Peggy Fleming. And
well, you know what?
Now I'm into Wayne Gretzky.
A pair of ice skates that my mom got.
Because you found her attractive, apparently, because you always go. She was so beautiful.
No.
That's not enough to admire somebody for.
No, her ability to skate and everything. I still.
You got to lead with that. Lead with, she was a fuck of a skater, man.
My best friend.
This chick can skate the fuck out of the ice.
I still, whenever they have the skating on ice and the competitions and everything like that, we'll call each other on the phone in case one doesn't know the other one's on. Right?
Okay, so you get engaged Christmas Eve, 1963. You get married when?
September 12th, 1964. 9 months later.
9 months later, you got married.
Yes, and I wasn't pregnant.
No, and then Virginia came out like 10 months or something later, whatever, right time.
The right amount of time, exactly.
Okay, so.
And then
so 63 is when you took going. We got to dial it back. 63 is when you get engaged. 64 is when you get married. But 62 is when you start dating dad.
Right.
So.
Correct.
62 to 64.
Don't ask me any embarrassing
from the moment you meet dad
at all,
to the moment you tie the knot.
Yes.
Did you earn your white wedding?
I would say so.
Well.
Yes.
Would a doctor say so? A gynecologist?
I would guess so.
You were just let me try to make this as painless as possible for you.
No, you're not. You're gonna.
No, it's gonna be painless.
Dad's up there, and he's not gonna answer either.
I don't want to make you squirm.
Yeah.
Was it you didn't have sex, but you did a lot of other stuff?
Close shots.
What is it?
Close shots. Let's put it that way.
What?
Close shots, but.
Wait, I think this might mean something different to me. You use the word shot. I'm like, what are you talking about? Close shots. What's
it's
that?
Like hockey. Your close shots. You you didn't get it in to the net.
Right? Oh, right.
Puck never got into the net.
Oh, he was a terrible cocksman is what you're saying. And still you married him. You're like, he had poor depth perception, but he was a nice guy.
No.
Very thin. Yeah, and he taught me to drive.
Very thin. Taught me how to drive.
But wait a second.
He was
a
good lover. He was a good.
Really?
Oh
my God. That creeped me out just to hear, but it's important.
I know.
So you didn't have sex until you got married, but you probably did everything up to.
Well, somewhat. So, I was very young and naive, and your father was very much older and mature.
Was he anxious or patient?
He was patient. The thing was, you miss in between is that I was sick one Christmas Eve, and he had to take this other girl to the company Christmas party,
and you are dating.
Really shocked that he did. It turned out that her name was why one time I got mad at home. If you remember Christmas time, Barrette was her name.
Her name Swedish was Barrette.
Girl. Barrette.
She was a Swedish chick.
Swedish chick.
And he took her to the pharmaceutical Christmas party.
Right. He sold the Volkswagen that he used to have. A Volkswagen. Vauxhall. Vauxhall is different than the Volkswagen. Smaller thing. And he had sold that to her. It was the ad in the paper. And he went and then he met her and sold it to her. And then little did he know that she was a lady of the night.
She was a pro.
Yes, a very pro. Very
really?
Pro.
The hardcore, like earning pro. This is what I do for a living.
Yes, so he found out.
My name is Barrette. I suck cock for a living.
Oh, stop.
God. Hello, Don.
Oh, yes.
Thank you for selling me the Vauxhall, but now we will have the sex.
So, in a way,
did he fuck around with her?
He sold the car to her.
Did he fuck around with her?
Well, I wouldn't put it in that term, and I don't think.
Did they fool around?
But he did fool around, he told me.
And you were dating?
And that's when I got a mad temperament, and I put a hole in the wall with my fist. Yes, I did.
At our house?
Yep.
Yeah, but hold on. But wait.
Before that, I was – oh, man.
Why did you put your fist through the wall in the house? Hold on. Let me set that – you're jumping all around.
He brought her name up.
There's a – hold on. There's a doorway going to our house was very, very small. We had three bedrooms.
This was in the apartment in Kearney.
Oh, I thought you meant this was the. Oh, no, I'm thinking the blood was thicker than water, fist through the wall.
Yeah. No, the blood. Oh, Uncle Wayne.
Yeah. That was in Jackson Street. Oh, this one you're talking about? I wasn't even present for.
You weren't alive yet.
You were in the apartment in Kearney?
Yeah.
And you put your fist through a wall?
Well, he brought up her name, and that just blew up my Irish side that he realized I had, because also.
How many years prior had Brett been?
I guess it was about a year. Yeah, because
we're and it was in still bumming apartment. You out.
Oh, sure, it's still.
Did
bumming
you feel
out.
Cheated on?
I felt because he decided to tell me the whole story that also he had gone out with her one at a time, and she went over to her friend's house, and there was a bunch of other ladies, and he was the only man.
He's like, Grace, let me tell you the whole story.
Yeah.
The reason I fucked this hooker is because she had a lot of hooker friends. Yeah. So, you know, you have to start at the bottom to get to the top hooker friend.
No.
So you guys were dating? You were officially an item?
No, we weren't officially engaged yet.
No, but you were an item, but like going out regularly.
And
you weren't dating anybody else, were you?
Nope.
And he wasn't dating anybody else. You're sick on a Christmas Eve. That's what, 1962?
Two.
A year later, he proposes. Mm-hmm. If I was you, I'd have been like, fucking kick rocks, bitch. Fuck you.
But
wait a second.
He chose to tell me. And
how soon after did he choose to tell you? Listen to you. You're saying it's a mistake?
Yeah, it was a mistake.
Are you telling our listeners that people should keep their infidelity hidden?
Well, it wasn't completely infidelity. We weren't married.
Right.
We weren't even engaged.
Oh, that sounds like something. You so cognitively
that
reframing
would have
it.
Been
it really did hurt.
It did hurt me a lot, but I'd had no right because of the fact that we weren't engaged. We were dating, but he still had a right as a single man to explore life.
Why did you have a right as a single woman to explore life?
Well, look at the times back then. If you did
okay,
that,
but now
you're a
looking
slut.
Back, yeah, but looking back it, now, don't you think you should have the same right that he had to sow his oats and shit? That you could have been out there,
there
fucking
times,
around
yes,
and
there
shit.
There are times that,
and not to be like,
that.
Not to fuck around, just to be like to fuck around, but just to experience
no,
life.
Would,
like you married, you were virgin, you married dad.
Yep.
Like, you didn't fuck anybody else.
No. I didn't actually date really that much either.
Yeah. I mean, you tell the story. You went from fucking, like, graduating eighth grade to, like, secretarial school to all of a sudden this lecherous old man is just like, lift up your poodle skirt. No. What's under there?
But God forbid, you know, he's going to look down from heaven and say, I can't believe my
nobody would laugh
this.
Harder at me than the old man.
Yeah. Your popsy. Yeah. Mm. But the thing was that. In terms, sometimes that's why I think my Irish temperament took off, because I would think to myself, well, I didn't have the rights that he had. Of course, if I did that in that generation,
that's why you were mad. It wasn't you weren't Irish. You were a goddamn woman. You were a feminist, is what you were, not an Irish.
You know, you would have been talked about in town and such like that.
Oh, totally.
He worked in the drug company, and one of the fellas had been sticking pins in condoms going down the. Conveyor belt.
Oh my God!
Like
please
that.
Tell me that's not my father.
And no, it wasn't your father. And he had come home and told me, because we were already married then. And he said, "I can't believe that." He said, "Some poor person is going to hope they're not getting pregnant, and because of that jerk, they might get pregnant."
Yeah, those are the days you before know? Fucking
right.
protective wrapping and shit like
and
that.
And everything else, right?
My sister was born August 10th, 1965. My brother was born August 2nd, 1966, and I was born August 2nd, same day as my brother. 1970, 4 years later. So we always figured out that you guys like to fuck in
an
election
day.
Year.
You said that in one of your Q&As
totally.
At college.
That's what I do,
Ma.
I tell jokes.
But in between there was a miss of two.
You may, yeah, I've told that story on this podcast too, that creepy kind of like, I missed one after
like
you, one before you, and one after.
Say that.
Yeah, it is unsettling. It's a weird thing to tell people.
But I know, because I was in, whether she realized or not, or if I ever explained this.
Well, how far along did you get?
The one where I was pushed through the people when I was going to JCPenney's for the TV all night when I stood up.
Oh, my God. You were one of these people that got stamped during a fucking sale?
Yeah. You didn't know that one?
No. Who knows this thing?
That was the one that I lost that was really important, and I just found out 2 days before that I was pregnant.
Why really important? Why was it really important?
Well, because Dad had been sick with his diabetes and was in the hospital, and then he came out, and he was doing much better. But that would have been like the gap between, you know, you and your brother.
Right. So wait, what year was this? So wait a second. You so you're children. Pregnant with a kid. How far along? You found out. You found out Christmas. You say
this was February. It was I think Lincoln's birthday.
President's Day sale.
President's Day sale. I drove up there. The Barracuda we used to have, remember, a little white Barracuda with.
I think that.
Oh, that was before your time. Yeah, I'm sorry. That was way before your time. Anyhow, and then parked in the front of the store at JM Fields, where up in Hazlitt, which is now some other big store, and
Airport Plaza.
Yeah, Newport Plaza, yeah. And parked the car right there, and nobody was around. Nobody had come out like 2 a.m. in the morning and stand in line but me. Mm-hmm. The store was going to open like 6 or 7. The guard saw me there, and then I'd gone up to, you know, the door, and he said, okay, we'll just park there and just wait till it starts. And fell off to sleep for a while, freezing cold. But it was, if you got there first, it was a piece of pie. It was a cardboard cut-out piece of pie for the percentage you got off. But the very first one had a choice of the big TV or the small TV, portable or whatever else like that. Long story short, real quick in synopsis there, you know, the crowd starts coming and this and that. And then I
let's encapsulate the story of the murder of your possible third child. That's, I mean, you go detail crazy, girl. I want to hear it all.
So the crowd gets there heavy and heavy, and they go to open the door, and I'm in the front. Fortunately, the guy come out before the doors open, telling everybody, calm down. Mm. This is the way it's going to be. I know the first three people that were here. So they entered me as number one, opens the door, and I get slammed across right into a whole case display of some clothing or something like that, right?
Jeez.
Knocked me right down and everything, right? And they're all running towards the TVs and everything like that. You're talking like 1968, something like that.
Right.
Then I get up and I go to start to walk, and the guys yell, no, wait a second, where's number one? Where's number one? So fortunately, they were very fair and honest in those days. Unfortunately, like opposed to what they do at some of these other sales at Christmas time. So he was very nice to me. Number one, you could pick what you want. I picked the screen TV in the cabinet, like you said, you know, Dad would be so happy. And when they opened up the thing, I had the highest. It was, I think, 20 or 25% off.
Mm.
So it was really great. So I do go home, and it's going to have to be delivered later on. And later that day, I was feeling some uncomfortableness and everything.
Mm.
And I called the doctor, and they had me go to the hospital and put me in gynecological floor, of course, and everything. Then I had a miscarriage.
Oh, good Lord. How far along were you then at that point?
It was only like about 2.5 months, something like that, I think it was, you know.
And had you told people or no?
Oh, no. Just Dad and I knew. We got the results.
But you didn't tell your parents, his parents?
No, they were shocked. But I wound up in the hospital, and then they had to know everybody because I ran into a fever and an infection. So they wouldn't even put me in the maternity side. They put me over on the other side, and I had to stay in. Of course, back then you got what they call D&C, dusting and cleaning, you know. They clean you up.
Yeah.
You know, you have to really have done.
Essentially an abortion.
No, not really. It's just they don't refer to that way as the, you know, the whole thing.
But I mean, that they're taking out the fetus, right?
I had dropped it already. I dispelled it.
So they got rid of whatever was left.
Yeah, that's what they call it, dusting and cleaning, D&C.
Ah, ooh, that makes me nervous.
Okay, I'm hoping the rest of the audience here.
Wait a second. That TV, where is that TV? I mean, not where is it now, but was that the TV that I grew up watching?
Mm-hmm.
The one with the big wooden cabinet where we would fucking have a little shelf and you'd put like the scale on top of it and everything and the doiling on top.
Because remember the first TV I won when the fireman came around
alive
on
for
Christmas
that one.
Eve? Yes, you were an altar boy. Christmas Eve and went to grandma.
That was their TV. Yeah. You won it in a raffle gave it to them.
It came afterwards.
So the big, because this TV I'm talking about is the one with the big wooden colonial. Yeah, that's the one.
Uh-huh.
So for that TV, you essentially gave up a fucking kid.
Yes.
Unbelievable.
Yeah, a nice child.
No wonder you're always having me fucking dust it and shit. You're always like, dust the TV. And I was like, who cares? Why are we treating this TV like a fucking piece of furniture? It's a goddamn television.
Because it was.
Now we know why. Yeah, it was important. A human life was spent to get it and shit. Did you ever find out who was responsible?
No, just the crowd pushed you, that's all. When the doors open, everybody else was pushing them and they pushed.
If we lived in a world of fucking superheroes, that's an origin story.
To save my day.
No, fuck being saved. You would have been like, never again. And then you'd be the dude that, or the chick, who hangs out on a rooftop at Toys R Us during sale days with all the people lined up at the door. And then as soon as they start shoving,
behave yourself.
Back.
Right.
Never again.
Kevin's making a whole cartoon strip now on me.
know. No, I need Scott Mosier. Scott Mosier, take it and run.
Run with it. As I look back.
I mean, those were days where you could feel like, think about this. We literally walked to school in the morning, you know, like, and that was, we leave Jackson Street. You walk down to Cumberland Farm, or as you would call it, Cumberland Farms on Bay.
You know, here's something funny. I live on that street now. Cumberland Circle.
Do you really? Do you call it Cumberland? My mother, man, there were two wrong-going jokes in our house growing up. I'm sure everybody has one about their mother, some form or another, or their father as well. But mom's go-to jokes in the house, one always involved Cumberland Farms. Her mispronunciation. She was not quite the queen of malapropisms and whatnot, but she – simple things. She'd be like, go down to Cumberland. We'd be like, Cumberland. Just go to Cumberland.
Go to the corner.
Cumberland Farms. There was the I don't know if Entenmann's was ever Entenmann's. But it was always Entenmann's.
Yeah, right.
Like bring home the Entenmann's coffee cake. Right. Then of course the go-to joke that is weird because it almost defines you as bubble-headed, but you weren't. But there was a Thanksgiving Day card we received. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, Donald laughs to this day. He goes, woof.
It is a thing. Woof. It's a code word joke in our family. We just go woof, and everyone's like, ha, 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 ha. There was this card, the Thanksgiving Day card, and you know, it was Snoopy and Woodstock on the front of the card, and Snoopy said, you know, every year at Thanksgiving, the succulent bird is eaten to celebrate, you know, the coming together of the pilgrims and the Native Americans, blah, blah, blah. And then you open the card and Woodstock simply says, woof. Now, we all read it and we are like, all right, good, well done, well played, Schultz, well played. Except one of us. Dad, me, Virginia and Donald all got it. And Mom was just like, I don't get it. And we were like, what are you kidding? And he's like, what do you mean? And we were like, woof, man. The bird says woof. And you were like, why is that funny? I don't understand. We really had, it took about 10 minutes to break it down for you.
Right.
And then you were like, the bird. Oh, he doesn't want to be a bird on Thanksgiving.
And they never let me forget it either.
We were kind of merciless about it, which is weird because you were pretty strict. Like you were a parent to be feared and whatnot. And we wouldn't fuck around. We were not disrespectful kids. Like nobody ever sassed. Nobody would ever dream of being like, go to hell or not even that far.
Oh, God.
Not even like, I remember one time, like I was on the couch. And you were like, can you come over here and do this? And I was like, wait a minute. And Dad, like, literally pushed me off the couch with his foot. He was like, you go when your mother calls. I said, wait a minute. I was going, Dad, I swear.
But woof is such a big thing that Donald got me a bowl for the cat.
It says woof on it. That's too funny.
In the bottom of the bowl for the and his dog, too. And I said,
do you remember when I almost killed Dad?
Yes. You mean standing on his shoulders in the pool up in Carrancroft. Canada.
Is that where it was?
Yep. Kids will never forget. We looked down.
Where in Canada? Niagara Falls.
Yep. Towards Niagara Falls. Went took these up there for that.
So weird. I have such
trip.
A tight connection to Canada now, and it all begins with that trip funny? To Niagara Falls. And I never went again for years, for we like went, 20 years.
And we went on our honeymoon, Niagara Falls.
Mm-hmm.
I found some footage tape I got to give you.
Really?
Yes.
Have you guys honeymoon? Is it sex footage? That would rock. If you found such footage of you and Dad fucking, like, and you
now,
were like, oh, my God.
In God's name? Not
like, he had
word.
A Super
making
8
love.
Camera.
Making love.
Oh, sex, fuck
making
footage.
Love.
Fuck footage. You're right. Let's not call it sex footage. If you found a fuck tape that you made, would you will it? Would you let me see it while you were alive? Would you let anybody see it?
You'll never find it because we didn't have cameras back then.
But I'm just saying, imagine you did. You got to go. That's
never
from podcast. Oh, but you never happened and then, oh, the show's over, lady. You got to go with it.
Yeah, okay.
Let's say, because he did take a lot of Super 8 films. Let's say Dad was like, hey, man, let's roll some fucking, I want to play some, I want to make some stag films, Grace. And you were like, do it, fucking Don. Let's do it dirty. And you made a little a Super 8 stag film and you've forgotten about it because it was years ago. And then you found it recently. Would you let me watch it?
No.
Would you will it to me so I could watch it after you died? That's a historical document. Who knows? That session could have been the one that birthed me or Virginia O'Donnell.
Being you, after a while, it would be out all over. Of course, after I was dead, it wouldn't matter.
But, exactly. What do you give a shit? Your toes up.
Right. I'm toes up. No, I'm in one of those urns for you next to dead.
Totally.
I would be cremated.
No, I would. Oh, I would love that. I wouldn't think that was weird at all, watching some stag film that you guys made. I wouldn't. I wouldn't feel it was erotic, but I would just be like, this is fascinating. How did he talk her into this? I've known this woman for 39 years, and you couldn't talk her into a fucking stag film. This dude must have been an insane cocksman to make this fucking happen.
Right.
Do you feel anything?
Not too bad. No, not really.
Not bad, but nothing?
Yeah. No.
We're going to have to have more. Look at this. We are completely hotboxed in this room. We haven't ventilated, so you see the smoke just lingering in the air. You're not even really getting a secondhand buzz. I'm telling you, I thought about it last night. I mean, you are in such a fucking concoction of drugs. It may have no effect on you whatsoever.
I guess that's what I was thinking today. But it is funny because it's a gorgeous day in California where it's freezing in Florida.
The place is shut up like a fucking cave.
Yeah, we could be up on the pool deck in the sun.
Fuck that noise. Enjoy, life has lived indoors.
Right. He's a spitting image of his father. Trust me, he really is. He is cloned to his father in so many ways, but yet people say he looks a lot like me. Features, you know?
Yeah, no, I definitely it's tough. But I think other people have said, no, it's clearly your mom. You look more like your mom. And I can't quite see it as well. Like, I can see me and Harley.
Yes.
Like, Harley just looks like me with a mark. Well, me without the beard.
Beard, right.
You know, and longer hair and thinner and a girl. But yeah, you and I, you have to look much harder, I think. Yeah. Also, it's tough because I always have the beard on. If the beard's off, I do tend to look
you
a bit more like you.
Baby face, and you're very handsome.
But also dad.
Very, very
and Donald
handsome.
Donald looks like you.
You know, I think he has a little bit more of the Smith trait in a way. I mean, but no, you got so much of your father in you, the same ways of you love your home.
Yeah.
You like to stay in it. You like to enjoy it.
Yeah.
And you like the privacy.
I like peanut butter in it.
Peanut butter in it. Yeah. He loves peanut butter like his father. And no, but so many things. And he's got the same great, wonderful talent of being a father. A father.
No, he's a much better father than I was.
No.
Well, you know what? Actually, that's not true. I would say me and dad are probably aggregate fathers.
Yeah.
I would say Jen is a far superior mother than I am a father. I didn't give up anything to have Harley. In fact, all I did was pile on more work after, you know, with the excuse of the rightful, justified excuse of, hey, I got to pay for a kid now.
Right.
But this is a woman who gave up all of her prospects and everything she had already done and could do. You know, all credit goes to her except for the fact that the kid genetically can't escape being me. Right. You know what I'm saying? And then so there are lots of behaviors that the kid has that I know I didn't instill at her, but are there because she is my kid.
Right.
But I enjoy my relationship with her a great, great deal. And, you know, naturally every parent can afford to spend more time with their kid. But I've never felt like, man, I always live my life in dread. One day I'm going to be that Harry Chapin Carpenter song and shit.
I always sing that to you.
Oh, just, yeah. Yep. I mean, what a horrible song to sing to a child. Cats in the Cradle. And
I sang it as you were older, not when you were younger.
Yeah. Well, again, what a horrible thing to sing to an adult who's just like, hey, man, I'm trying my best.
That's right.
I mean, you just never want to be that. But, you know, we'll see. And I feel like I've done a great job, but...
Yeah,
or the job. I feel like I've done the job that my father did, and I feel like I turned out great. I never think back and go like, you know, I've seen other people's relationship with their father, and they were different dynamics and closer or more distant or more, you know, antagonistic or, you know, more loving or whatever. But I never once go like would want to trade the one that I had with him. You know, and it really informed a great deal about who I am. I mean, look, it afforded me a lot of time to speak just because he didn't that much. You know what I'm saying? Like, he was a dude who, like, you know, you didn't really have a conversation with dad.
Yeah, sometimes that was it. Later on, I found as he got older, of course, he was more in touch with, he wanted to be seeing you more. He wanted to be in the places that wherever you were going to talk anymore. Mm. That's when we went to Philadelphia, of course, on that last fatal night. But the fact of the matter is like, once you took off in your career, you based stuff from home on Jackson Street, and that made him really proud.
Right.
Cards were Jackson
Street. Yeah, all the stuff cars, business cards were Jackson Street.
Everything came that way. And then all of a sudden that was taken away from him.
Yeah.
But then we moved out when grandma got sick and she passed away. You afforded us to move out to the home that was really, I could recreate over again.
In Red Bank.
In Red Bank.
Right. And, moved out of Highlands. Grandma died.
Right.
And that was 97. Grandma died. And then you and Dad were like, you know what? We're done with Highlands. Right. And moved over to Red Bank, a lovely little house by the that you promptly painted hideously pink. But it was located right by the water.
It was supposed to be a different color. It came out, unfortunately.
Came out awfully pink.
Yeah. You picked your sister up from Hong Kong. She was home before she was pregnant. After Grandma died, she wasn't able to come home till the following because of being away with her husband. So the company only allowed him once every 2 years, long story short. So she comes home. We pick her up at Newark Airport, bring her home, excited. We're going to show her the house. And we'd like drive around the neighborhood a little bit. Dad wasn't going to go straight in. He said, drive around. So we drive around and we pass the pink house.
Why do you just want to be cruel like driving around?
We're just showing her.
Let's see if she'll put her fucking foot in her mouth. Playing cruel head games with your children.
I have the cutout for this now. So what happened was we're going past and she goes, oh, that house looks like Pepto-Bismol. And I was like, oh.
She called it before you pulled
it. Blew me away, Pepto-Bismol. So later on in an article from one of the local papers came the girl to interview me. That actually lived down the block or so. In,
it was just like, Carol, you just want to do a story on
don't do the interview.
Why the fuck you're this? Paint this color.
She says, oh, I just wanted to know. And now I know you're Kevin's mother and such. How do you feel living over here in Red Bank and everything? And then, unfortunately, I was stupid enough, as Carol very nicely put it, don't say anything. She said something. I said, well, when we pick my daughter up from Hong Kong to stay a week here for her baby shower, she said, oh, look at that funny looking Pepto-Bismol house. They quoted in bold letters across the headline of the article, the Pepto-Bismol house. And I was like, oh, God, open mouth, insert foot.
Dad was always fucking around with Virginia, man. I know, I mean, in a fucking innocent way. Yeah, it sounds horrible.
Retract.
Dad was always, I mean, remember when he found out Virginia was smoking and instead of just going like, hey, don't smoke. He went and he took, I mean, this was like fucking right out of the fucking Tim Burton's Batman. He went through 1,000 magazines and cut out all these smoking ads, of which there were thousands back then.
Oh, God, yeah.
Live with Pleasure and fucking all these people smoking. Marlboro Man
existed back then.
Totally. Yeah. Camel. And
he also died to a cancer.
Yeah. He cut out all these ads, and he would hide them all over her room, put them under a pillow, put them under the mattress, put them in her drawers, put them in her fucking laundry.
And he also blackened out the teeth or something.
He took them and he fucking graffitied all over them to show like what happens to people that fucking smoke.
Yep.
Like they get green or yellow teeth or whatever. And never said a word beyond that? That was that?
Yep.
Did you guys ever actually confront her? Or?
She finally came out. And
she was like, look, what the fuck?
She started crying because she knew she was in trouble.
Right.
She knew that we heard something or figured something out.
What do you say it with such relish? You're like, and we got her.
Yep.
You're like the Jew hunter, man. You like chased her out from under the floorboards, man.
Well, we did because was she in her junior year or something like that?
Mm-hmm.
Got a little, you know. Hang out with the gang. Let's be like the gang and all that.
What she did was nothing. In retrospect, what she did was
in the girls' room.
So insanely tame. But in our household, this fucking chick was painted as the one Kennedy that they had to get the fucking frontal lobotomy for because she was too wild. And it was all shit. Like, I remember there was a big controversy over a Blue Oyster Cult shirt where you guys were like, what is this? Is this demonic now? Because it was very, like, you know, demonic looking image and shit. And I remember being young and just wanting to throw her under the bus because I was the younger brother. And I was just like, it is demonic. They told us in church. She got in more shit. I testified against my sister. I threw her under the bus. I didn't gain anything from it. I was just like, ah, fuck it. Let's see what happens.
Oh, yeah, right?
That's
also the same when he's competitive with in writing sometime, you know.
No, I think that's vice versa. She did. She encouraged me. My sister was the first one that introduced me to the notion that you could write something. You know, I always thought like writing was just done by fucking machines or large, lumbersome gods that walked through forests and told stories. I didn't know where it came from. It never occurred to me that we could create it ourselves. And she had been writing a book, like in a composition notebook, The Secret Mystery of the Secret Door or some such shit, in which she was a character and her friend Patty was a character, Patty Michaelsick, and couple other broads she was friends with were characters as well. And she drew a cover and shit. It looked like an old Nancy Drew cover. You know, you could tell it was Virginia had short hair with glasses and shit. Right? And I was so like, I was like, what are you doing? You know, and she was like, oh, I'm just writing this book about mystery story about me and my friends. I was like, you can't do that. What are you talking about? What do you mean? What are you just writing? I just could not understand. I couldn't get my head around it. And when I finally explained it in fucking, you know, retarded terms that I was like, oh, you can. I was so amazed by that. You know, I was just like, wow, that's cool, man. You just write something. It doesn't matter. You don't have to ask the cops or something. Like, is there a law here? What's the, you know, cool?
Yeah, she encouraged you. And then also she.
Then she sent me to Est later on. Years later. After I made Clerks, she sent me to the Forum. Because she'd been harassing me for years about going to the Forum because Uncle Wayne sent her to Est, and Est begat the Landmark Forum. And it is a self-actualization course. I think I've spoken about it on this podcast before. Very Tony Robbins, very like, you know, self-empowerment. Yeah. You believe in your future and create it and vision it and blah, blah, blah. For years, Virginia had been selling me on, you should go to the Forum, you should go to the Forum. And I just shot Clerks and broke up with Kim Lochran. So it was like, I was 20,000 plus in debt. My girlfriend and I were not together. I was living in a house that had been destroyed by a flood, and I was working at a fucking convenience store. I was like, yeah, this might be a good time to see if I can actualize something out of this, because I am fucked.
A Buick and it broke down or got,
yeah, that was the car. Yeah, it caught on fire. That was the car that was Dante's car in the movie. I was driving down to the Landmark Forum to a graduation course. This was after I had taken it, and you know, it's a 3-day course. And then they were like, we will break you and remake you in 3 days.
Yeah.
And then, you know, your graduation, quote unquote, you get a day off, you go collect a bunch of people, come back and, you know, fucking, you quote unquote graduate. And essentially you're pitching the next people. It's a pyramid fucking scheme. But good technology. I mean, it's technology that we should all have, you know, technology with which to deal with people, or interact. But we just don't think about or use. These people just kind of put it right up front. So, it was me and Lochran, and Kim were driving because it was in Philly where Virginia lived, where I attended the Forum. So, you know, it's a 2-hour drive Kim and I were broken up, but I convinced her to go with me because I'm like, it's so important and so important. I'm so different. Everything's changed, blah, blah, blah. So she was driving with me in Dante's car, which was my car. And we're on the New Jersey Turnpike, almost by Philadelphia. And motherfucker just starts seeing some smoke coming out the hood. And I was like, do you see that? And then all of a sudden I saw a flame pop through the hood. And I was like, Jesus Christ. I said, well, let's pull over. And we fucking pull over and get out of the car. And I pull the hood. And tons of smoke, tons of flame.
You just fed it.
And I was just like, we gotta fucking, we should move, Kim. And we just started walking away from the car. Fire reaches the tires. Bam, bam. And like the car literally was on fire. It was one of those scenes where the fucking fire truck shows up. That side of the parkway is shut down. And I'm like, I didn't do it. I'm sorry. I was just trying to go to the Landmark Forum graduation. This is my ex-girlfriend. I'm trying to get laid again. I left my glasses
on the dash.
Yeah, yeah.
They were still there, but the frames.
Yeah, and I went back and got them because, you know, they towed this fucking burned husk of a car. And, you know, I grabbed stuff out of it when we jumped out, like my bag, my script bag or whatever. But I left my glasses because I was wearing sunglasses. I left my real glasses on the dash. Yeah. So they got cooked in the fucking fire. But when we went back to the car, I found them and the rims, you know, they were a little singed. But I was like, I just need new lenses. So, I liked them. They were good frames. So I got grabbed those. But, yeah, that car got fucking destroyed. But anyway, yeah, Virginia sent me to the Forum, you know, and good things do come of it.
Both
or came
her and
from
Donald
it.
Bought you the first word processor, right?
No, I think that was you. I don't think that was her and Donald. Mm-hmm. Yeah, the word processor on which I wrote Clerks and the first draft of Dogma. Yeah. But yeah, she was definitely a big influence, man. And Donald was a big influence because he was the first audience. He was the best. He was the dude that, like, you know, Virginia was like, yeah, anybody could write. Introduced me to that notion. And Donald introduced me to the notion of, writing can be entertaining.
Yeah.
You know, where I was like, oh shit, he was the first audience. So it was good. Yeah. It was a good house to grow up in. I mean, you know, you're trying to figure out the exact path that one has to take in order for this to all happen again, because you would love to set your own child on it and be like, hey, man, if I could fucking let the dominoes fall for you the same way they fell for me, you'll be just as happy as I am, you know, right now, growing up in life and shit like that. But it's already, the dichotomy is completely off. There is no siblings for her. She's the only kid, so all the attention is focused on her. And she lives with her grandparents. Our grandparents lived around the block, but this is a multi-generational household up and down where they are primary caregivers alongside Jen. So it's like already the formula is completely different. But then you start to see, you know, the product of the new formula. What a generation that has that, instead of being me being one of three kids, you know, who grew up in Highlands in this era where this was the general consensus of thinking, the half of a product of that, you know, is enters into a relationship with a chick who comes from a completely different upbringing. We produce a kid who now has to grow up in a completely different environment where she has everything she could ever want and never really asks for anything because it always just appears in front of her like a fucking Harry Potter, you know, movie or something like that. It's, I remember when I gave her the huge Sully and Mike figures that I had from Pixar sent them to me because I said nice things about the movie for an Oscar ad or something like that. Huge figures, bigger than me. That Sully figure. Yeah, they're down in Florida now. You know, put him in the kid's room, and I was like, this kid is going to fucking have a kid when she sees this. This is going to be the most amazing thing a child's ever seen. And she walked into the room, and she was like, pretty, and then just went and played with any number of other giant things in the room. You know what I'm saying? And it's not like she didn't appreciate it or something like that.
It just didn't faze her.
Well, yeah, it was just like, well, this is what – isn't this what every child has in their room? And, I, you know, you wanted to be like, are you out of your mind? When I was a kid, man, we had – I had a little, my parents would give me these little plastic dolls when I went to the dentist. They were like fucking six inches tall. Yosemite Sam and Bugs Bunny and the Roadrunner and Popeye. It was a weird assortment of characters. But, you know, that was huge.
Right.
She has like a Sully figure that she could like sleep cradled in the arms of.
9 foot, 8 foot, nine
the
foot.
The Mike
tall.
Figure was almost as big as her, if not bigger.
Yeah.
I mean, it was pretty impressive, but she was not, you know, not unappreciative at all. She was like, thank you, but just nonplussed. Yeah, she was just like, you know, I'll put it here next to my golden chariot and winged horse. Thank you, Father. You know, so it's weird watching my kid grow up because the formula is not there, but she's honed so close to who I am. Yeah, genetically speaking, it's been kind of interesting. But it was a good formula, a family in which to
things that she likes that she follows hockey and things like that.
Yeah. But Jen, I did that early on. That's an instance of a kid who's like, she don't give a fuck about hockey. She's just like, she knows I like hockey.
Yeah.
And so she's like, ooh, hockey, 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 Devils, Marty Brodeur. And she'll like, we'll watch a game. And she'll sit down with me and bring any number of other projects with her. And she'll look up and I'm like, ooh, and you know, and celebrate a goal. But it's cute. If she was really into it, I'd be like, well, she's here because she likes the Devils, but clearly she's there because she likes her father, and that's endearing as fuck. Okay, so you guys get married, and then a year later you have Virginia, and you're living in Kearney.
Right.
And that's in near Newark.
Yeah, over the borderline from
– that's where they got that statue of Lou Costello. Oh, the Lou Costello Memorial, I think, is in Kearney.
Up in the
– yeah, Vinny Pereira, when he made his movie A Better Place years ago for us, that little movie, $40,000 movie we financed, available on DVD, he shot it up in Kearney. At jamesandbob.com. He shot it. Up in Kearney at a high school in Kearney that was closed over the summer.
Wow.
But I was always like, wow, life comes full circle oddly.
Doesn't it?
Yeah. So you guys live in an apartment in Kearney.
Yep. Third floor walk up.
Mm-hmm. No elevator. So you just
It was funny with the at that time you had car beds, baby to be in for Virginia. So that was, you know, really wild going up and down the stairs, but daddy was in very good health and, you know, young and slim and vigorous.
Pineapple Express or another piece of red velvet?
Pineapple Express. We're
going to
go with this now.
That fucking rock. That was worth the price of an airplane ticket alone right there.
Right.
Without missing a beat. Pineapple Express. Anyway, you're fired. I rocked. I love you to death, brother.
I love you too. And they'll make you laugh here. This is probably some of the things you don't know. Your father and I were going to go over to see Grandma in baby Virginia, right?
Yes. Woo, that was awesome.
Pineapple Express.
This is so fucking awesome.
What happens is I said something to him about, you know, well, change your pants from work and, you know, go see your mother. Why do I have to change my pants? I said, well, you know, just change it from work. I was going to see your mother. He said, no. I said, hon, we can't go unless you change it. No. He turns around. He puts his trench coat on that I always get at home there, right?
Mm-hmm.
His shorts underneath, you know, BVDs, whatever mm-hmm. you want to call them. No pants and his shirt on and walks down the stairs of Baby Virginia to go to Grandma's house. I go, we're not going. Oh, yes, we are. No, we're not. Yes, we are. One of those things back and forth.
Why?
Baby Virginia in the car bed.
Why? Because he wouldn't put on pants?
Yeah. He says, I'll go the way I am going, you know?
So, man after my own heart.
I knew you'd laugh at that one, but obviously he later on put some pants on to go.
Because sooner or later.
Like you,
he
was contented not to have to go all the time.
Yeah.
But every Sunday we had to visit both set of parents.
That I know. You wrote his eyes about that. If it were up to him, he wouldn't visit
would never
his own parents.
He'd go see my parents before his. If it really was.
He had no choice. They were right around the block.
To be said. No, I mean before when we lived in Kearney. We used to leave Kearney on a Sunday, go to Grandma Smith's for a dinner, mm-hmm. or late, you know, brunch, lunch, dinner, whatever you want to call mm-hmm. it. Then we leave her house and stop at my parents' at night on the way home back to Kearney again. And they were always watching Lawrence Welk in the kitchen.
Jesus Christ.
At a black and white TV. And Tillinghast Street or something else. And then as time went on, of course, my parents lived down the shore right behind our house. So then I didn't have to travel far.
Yeah, you saw them fucking left and right all the time.
Consult for my husband to get himself together to go up to see his parents in Hillside.
Right.
But anyhow.
Yeah, you did have to ride his ass to go see his parents. He was never that interested.
He wanted to stay home with you and the kids. I mean, with me and the kids.
And also they were just.
With you and Kevin, but.
They were just kind of dicks. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? Like, his parents were kind of cold people. Like,
they weren't outgoing, endearing. They were to my sister-in-law, their daughter, of course, and that's where the bloodline runs. That's their daughter. That's her daughter's children.
Mm-hmm.
This is their son.
Yeah.
But he got married to a young girl.
Who's not of the bloodline. Yeah, they would have been happy if he married Barbara.
Right.
Because they'd keep it in the. Yeah. He's like, they've treated them like the royals, man.
I can tell you a quick one to throw in there to confuse everybody, too. Speaking of that, we never spoke about mm-hmm. my being adopted.
Yeah.
And I always found that kind of awkward to myself that I kept that a big, dark secret.
Yeah.
So when you did
like
say that.
Like it was dirty or bad or something.
Right. So when you did say that word, you're like.
You react.
You know, I react. You're like, okay,
like it matters.
Uncomfortable. At my wedding shower,
mm-hmm.
There was a friend of the family. It was a Girl Scout leader, Mrs. Perkins. I'll never forget. And somebody said something from Grandma Smith's side.
Uh-huh.
My sister Virginia was sitting up next to me, helping me open the gifts.
Uh-huh.
And somebody says, quickly here, that, they don't look alike like sisters.
Meaning you and Aunt Virginia.
And Aunt Virginia. So this Girl Scout leader, friend of the family, unfortunately I found out later, on said, oh, they're not. Gracie's adopted. Well, my mother-in-law-to-be had a holy fit, took off on your father when she got back. So then the next night we're on a date,
mm-hmm.
your father mentions it, and I just lost it. We were standing outside talking. He had parked the car.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll never forget, that's when he said I was, Irish all the way. The fact that I got into a great debate with him because his mother was very upset that he didn't mention that to her.
Well, like it matters.
First of all, it was none of her business, I felt.
Or it matters.
Right.
What's the diff?
And secondly is I think I had – at that point, maybe said something to your father, maybe not, but it was an awkward situation. The guy's coming down the middle of the street where I'm having this argument verbally
mm-hmm.
with your father in the middle of the street, on Tillinghast Street. The guy's coming down with his car and he beeps the horn and everything. And I just like, shut up, blah, 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 blah. And I start kicking at his car as he's going by.
You were one of those mouthy Jersey broads.
Right.
You never had an accent, a discernible accent, knew you were dad.
Not really that much, but when I'm in Florida, they can tell.
You have a central Jersey accent. You still don't fucking have. Well, yeah, maybe you come from the north because you're not like, can we subscribe tie? But I mean, you know, it's not Jersey. It doesn't read like Jersey or traditionally what people think of as Jersey or now what fuckers think of as Jersey based on that ridiculous show. It's called The Jersey Shore. Jersey Shore, this reality show. It's ridiculous. It's sickening.
What was it on?
It takes place in Seaside Heights.
Oh, my God.
It's a bunch of Guidos. Losers. Losers. That's what they call them. They call them Guidos and Guidettes. I mean, they go one step shy going, look at these guinea clowns. Oh, I mean, these fucking dudes t-shirt. That prance around, no t-shirts on, and look at my fucking man tits and shit. And the chicks are all idiots and fucking, tons of fucking hair and tons of makeup. They showed a preview for one episode where, like, it was fucking horrifying. I'm like, this is Roman times. This is bread and circuses. They show a preview for an upcoming episode where this chick is, like, at a bar, full bar. Dude's sitting at a bar. Chick is on one side of the dude. Dude's on the other side of this dude. They're having a fight across from each other. She's barking at him. This dude's not really having a fight. He's kind of looking away. He just turns around and fucking rocks her right in the face. Punches her fucking hard.
Broken nose.
And it was a trailer for a TV show, like next up on this. And that happened. That ain't fake. Wow. It's so sick. But anyway.
Is that on cable?
And the really sick thing. No, it's on. Yeah, cable. And
yeah.
MTV. The really sick thing, though, is like, you know, it's called Jersey Shore. But fucking of all the people on the show, it's like two people from Jersey. The rest are fucking New Yorkers or elsewhere. And they all, it's, you know, a bunch of fucking Bennies. Ugh. You spend so much time, spent fucking 15 years trying to make Jersey, you know, not
clean
the fucking
cut, wonderful
nuclear state. Nuclear waste fucking, right. You know, Love Canal type bullshit or an armpit of the nation.
Even
put a good fucking Sopranos. Image out there of just like, yeah, even make I'll take the fucking Sopranos, man. Right. I'll take mobsters and wise guys over this fucking, this
is
clowning.
Really
this is really
lie?
Clowning. I mean, you know, there's a term for it. I mean, I guess in terms of like back in the days of, when black entertainers would play to Uncle Tom or something like that, it would be referred to as cooning.
Right.
It's very much like cooning for Italians. And I mean, you could rightfully so. There are many Italian American groups up in arms about like fucking, don't call them Guidos, number one.
That.
That's a fucking insult. You might you don't throw around a fucking N word.
That's never
going like
to make
that.
It. That's never
and
gonna
yet,
make it.
It's huge. And yet, the ratings are huge. Come in. Who is it? Yeah, way busy. What's up? Doing some odd. You all right?
Oh, yeah, no. I'm just coming in my bike. I just
want to say
hi.
Hey, honey. How you doing?
See you later.
I'll talk to you later on. So anyway, but I mean, you don't have that discernible accent at all. You don't have it. You don't pop like Jersey to me at all. So she got all tight because you were adopted?
Yeah.
Grandma, and then did Dad give you any shit about it?
Not really, but he was telling
me. And you're
me,
yelling at him in the street, and this motherfucker walks by, and then what?
He's upset because his mother's upset.
Right.
And he's saying that, you know.
Who cares?
He probably sat down and told my mother, and I said, again.
Yeah, like,
it's
why?
It's not her business.
Well, what does this have to do with anything?
At that
why don't
point,
we sit down and tell her how we fucked, Don? How about that? You know what I'm saying? Or not fuck, because this is pre-wedding. It's just none of her business.
Well, he was at that point. He was still geared for.
She's not marrying
mother,
you. He's married
his mother and family and stuff like that. Until he found out what he wanted was his own family, his children.
He wanted to break with Rome.
Yes.
He wanted to start his own church, the Anglicans. Hey, he was just like, we're done with Rome. We're done with this bullshit. The hypocrisy sickens us. And here, take the act of succession. Take the oath. Yeah, you could see he definitely like, you know, he lived in a family where he's like, okay, I know how this is done. And I think I figured out a way to do it better.
Better.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
And he did.
He always wanted to.
Because he created a loving family. You could say what you will about our family. I mean, maybe we're just not as exciting as our relatives who would punch each other in the face on their lawns. But he created a very loving family with kids that all turned into something and never really got trapped by anything. Like, I was going to say, we never got into drugs. But
no.
Well, here we are eating fucking. You're like, give me that Pineapple Express, motherfucker.
it's very tasty.
It's good, isn't it? So you're on the curb, and this chick, you're this mouthy chick yelling at him, and this dude's walking past. Did he get involved or no?
No, he was driving.
He's driving by, and he stopped, and you kicking at the car, going, "Get the fuck out of here! What are you looking at?"
No, I didn't. I just said, "Get on, mind your business." And I kicked his car.
The fuck out of you! Did not just say, "Get on, mind your business."
Yep.
You are the ones who are the no. You definitely
no. I was Irish. I had my temperament up.
Yeah.
I just say, mind your own business. And I did. And I kicked the score.
Go fuck yourself.
No, I would never have said that in a lifetime. I never would have.
So eventually he was just like, look, I want to continue getting laid. I don't give a shit about this issue. It means nothing to me.
No, that was pre.
That was
pre-marriage, pre-engagement. Well, no, it was the engagement. It was the, what am I saying? No, it was the wedding shower.
Mm-hmm. That was after the wedding shower. And Grandma Smith from that point on was, well, she wasn't exactly welcoming to begin with.
Yeah.
It was just like, well, this is the adopted woman. this fallen adopted woman. Would you say that was the beginning of like the end of your relationship with Grandma Smith?
Well, somewhat so. There was other things
that she
did.
She was a bitch, let's be honest. And you know, whatever. Well, no jury's going to convict you for saying this.
But
she just made
it
fucking hard.
Way.
She saw you as somebody that took the fucking... her son away, and she just made you pay for it forever. And you were always so nice to her, and you went out of your way, and fucking, we always. I mean, look, without you, he never would have saw his parents nearly as much. He had no interest in going down there, and hence we wouldn't have gone, which would have been awesome. But unfortunately, you fucking like made us go down. But you know, for his own good.
Tuesday after Grandma Smith died, and Daddy got better from his accident.
Yeah, we'd go down and see Grandpa.
Go down and bring him a ham or something like that.
I know. I remember the few that I had to go on where I was like always trying to be busy doing something else.
I know.
But the few I had to go on, you could hear the clock ticking
away.
Yeah, in three rooms over, just click, click, click. Click, click. Nobody saying anything. What's to say? He's just sitting there waiting to die.
That was my
so
penance.
Depressing.
Anyhow, then when he up
your
and
penance,
died.
You didn't do anything. You didn't do anything to deserve penance.
When he up and died so fast and tragically like that, like we're on our way down for his birthday. These were all his presents. We had to stop at the
wasn't all that tragic. He just died at home, right?
Yeah.
My fucker got up one day and just died. Died in his chair, did he?
Died in his chair. Don Oaks found him.
I mean, you couldn't ask for a better death than that. He loved
that
chair.
Yeah.
What a cold man and tough to know, aloof.
Well, you know,
great head of hair, though.
Kevin,
you got to give him
Kevin's
that.
Right.
He was all
great
hair.
Head of hair. And Kevin's right. He was strange because he'd always say, Rex is down in the basement.
Yeah, I think I've spoken about them on Spotcast, too. They were fucked up. These were the days where you would, you know, psychologically torture and fuck around with a kid's head.
Head, right.
And they would go to their house and they'd be like, they had a basement in their house.
Hillside, New Jersey.
Hillside, New Jersey. What was the street?
Leo Street. 532 Leo Street.
So we would go up, and they had a basement there, you know, and the house was kind of built into a hill, so the driveway descended. And so there was this whole portion of the house, which we never saw. We also never saw the upstairs.
No.
As far as the house was concerned, all we ever saw was the living room, kitchen, and the bathroom, if you were allowed to use it. And we would go, and we'd sit on the couch, and you guys would go as adults, and we would bring books to read and shit like that. And Donald fondly tells the story of the one day where, you know, somebody said, no, you know, I'm the ape who learns to say, no, I'm Caesar in Conquest of the Planet of the Apes. And I go into the kitchen because I'm like, fuck this noise. I said, Grandpa, can we watch TV? And he was like, yeah, go ahead. And Virginia and Donald were like, after 10 fucking years, all we had to do was ask, why didn't we think of this? And from then on, we watched TV. But they would never let us go downstairs because – and he said, like, you can't go down there. Rex is down there. And we're like, Rex? What do you mean? He's like, Rex is a German shepherd. Mm-hmm. Bite your head off. And, you know, for a kid who didn't have dogs, I was like, there's a dog in this house? And, yeah, there's a dog, and you can't meet it. And if you meet it, it'll kill you. So stay away from that fucking door. You know, I didn't curse. But it was very, very like – it was weird. And then it wasn't until I was like 28 where Donald was like, they didn't have a dog. And it was just said to keep you away from the door. I was like, you're kidding. Hey, well, Rex, the horror dog, it didn't exist. Yeah, but they weren't warm people, man. Well, you put in the time, too.
Well, I looked at it this way, that they give birth to your father.
Yeah.
She was 19 years old and faced that horror tragedy of having a baby brought
you're
to her.
You're making excuses
that had,
for her. Don't do it.
Left, you know, cleft palate.
You're making excuses for her, man. Like, that's not fair.
Well, that's why she looked at me like I was the enemy taking Donald away. Yeah. Donald bought me an engagement ring that Christmas.
If I'm her, I would have been like, oh, my God, he found a chick who's going to fuck him and whatnot. Doesn't care about his cleft palate or hair lip. God bless, man. Here's a huge dowry, which never happens for a man.
That'd be the day they expect it, you know, us to bring them things, you know.
Yeah, no doubt.
They didn't. They were nice.
So you guys walk around the block, you find this house, and you're like, right on, let's fucking move around the block for my parents. And he's for it?
All for it, 100%.
See, that's just like me, too. I live with my wife's parents. And you know, I'm all for it. I didn't have to be fed this or anything.
They live with you. You put it that way, right?
Yeah, true. That's true.
In your house.
Vice versa. But I mean, so he decides, okay, I can live around the block from your parents.
Yeah.
He loves so he's Raymond really. Before Raymond.
Yeah.
So you move in what day? 67?
Yes. 64.
Is raining, snowing, horrible weather?
It was 66 before your brother Donald was born. Was 66.
66. Mm-hmm. Bad weather you're moving
Bad
in?
Bad weather, yeah.
And we were right on the water, so it's even worse. Man, you're getting that whipping cold water.
That morning we woke up in Kearney.
Wind off the water.
And the car wouldn't even start. We had the battery jumped. The guy was late coming with the truck because he had trouble because of the bad weather and frozenness and everything out there. But lo and behold, we made it. They took a baby Virginia over at Grandma and Aunt Virginia took care of her for the day. And then they met us down the shore later on.
And now, let me ask you this. How long ago does that feel to you?
Some days I can do it just like that, the same as the day Daddy died. And right in my mind, right there, I can even do movement to movement in the emergency room. I can do for him and I getting there, and we had to bring in salt, holy water, and a broom.
For what's this now?
That's one of the old wives' tales, that you bring in salt, so you always have something to eat and good luck.
When you moved into the house?
Moved in the house. Had holy water brought in, and then you had a broom to sweep clean and keep out all the devils, you know.
Right.
You know, so that was what we did. But then we looked at each other, and we had nothing to eat, and we had exactly spent his income tax return check, I think, was $112 that year, and the truck was about $90, and we had to give him extra for coming down the shore, gas. And we had maybe two nickels to rub together, and that was
What'd you guys eat?
We actually ate at a little restaurant right in the town that was open because we had no food in the house. I didn't know Mom and Grandma and Aunt Virginia was going to
be Where in the town? Uptown? Downtown?
In Highlands. Where was
right it? On Bay Avenue.
I think on Bay Avenue, yeah. Way back then, we used to have a bowling alley across the street from Grandma's before that burned
down. Yeah, that became the Lobster Barn.
Right. And then across the street from there, that was one of the restaurants on Bay Avenue, was a food place, a grocery place that was in the town for years.
Wow.
You know? So, I mean, a lot of things have come and gone. Aunt Loretta lived next door, and, you know, she'd always talk to you, just going back and forth. You'd sit in the playpen.
Aunt Loretta, yet another person we weren't related to, but
nope,
called
that's
aunt.
True, right? Absolutely.
You grew to know her just by being her neighbor.
Neighbor, right.
So weird.
She came over to see you kids.
Never questioned it. And then she moved uptown. Yeah. She was the original White Jeffersons.
moved on up.
Bugging uptown.
Going on up.
So you're living in this house. You got the two kids. You miscarry one kid in 1970.
Yes, 1970.
You have another in the summer of 70. You have another kid. So you find out when, at the tail end of 69 or the first month of 70.
I guess it had to be about the first month and beginning, right after the holidays, because you were born in August, which is 8 months.
That'd be 8 months. So at that point, you find out you're 1 month pregnant.
Oh no, we didn't know before Christmas because you know why?
Why?
I got this cute little Snoopy dog, was so big, about a foot and a half tall.
Uh-huh.
Had a little sailor's hat we put on it, and on there was a note to Rosemary and Gerard to be your godparents.
Why you gave it to them?
Yes, for that Christmas.
And you said you guys want to be the godparents.
Yep.
And how old were they at that point?
Oh, Rosemary was probably only like 12 and Gerard would be 14 maybe, something like that. They were very young.
So does it still count now if you die? Do they adopt me? And does that all still count?
No, I don't think so anymore.
It's only – they're responsible for my spiritual growth. So when you die – they got to call up every Sunday and be like, "Did you go to church?"
They don't go to church either. So no, Gerard does. I shouldn't say that. Yes, Gerard does.
Does he?
He goes every Saturday night. Yep. God bless him.
Okay, so 1970. Do you? You probably don't remember the circumstances under which I was conceived. Do you?
Not probably conceived, but I can certainly tell you the facts of the day you were born.
Okay.
Gone to mass in the morning with Rosemary.
It all started with church.
Yep, there I was going to see, you know.
And there I am in your belly giggling whenever the priest says, "Blessed is he who comes in the name of the Lord." I'm like, "Tee," and you're like, "Stop that."
Shame on him. No, but what happened was during Mass, I was going into somewhat early labor, and I was gripping onto the pew, and Rosemary was right next to me. "Are you okay? Are you okay?" "Yeah, it's okay. I was having a contraction.
Uh-huh.
So we called the doctor's office, and it turned out that he was over in Red Bank Hospital.
Mm-hmm.
And I go in there, and I get an examination from this nice, great-looking Greek doctor that Montessori.
Montserrat.
Oh, my God, it came back. How you like that for
you're always – it's weird that you remember – you gauge people on their attraction level. You're always like, "She's beautiful," or, "Ooh, he was handsome."
Yes, he was very handsome. I was like, "Ooh," for the doctor to deliver.
You're like, "This dude's going to see my fucking bush."
No, I didn't even think those words.
Well, I mean, what do you think?
You know, I think he got a dictionary in life that does not compare it to the rest of us in the family.
Yeah. It's the dictionary everybody works from, as I'm working from. So anyway, Dr. Montserrat
comes to the hospital. And, well, actually was there before me. There was somebody else giving birth. Mm. And he was there for Excuse me. And it turns out that he examines me and says, well, I think you're going to have the baby right here pretty soon. And I go, no. And he goes, yes. And I said, no. I said, I have to go over to Monmouth Medical Hospital to have this baby because it'd be born on the same day as my son in the same hospital, Long Branch, you know. And also, this was the kicker. There were first time.
So you wanted me to be born on the same day as Donald?
Yeah, because I held on. Oh. Yeah, we were supposed to be either a week earlier or a week later.
Right.
So the other thing.
Why did you want it? You're like, easy to remember.
No, I'm this
two
close.
Two birthdays, kill two birds with one stone.
No. I was this close to your birthday. You were supposed to be a July baby.
Right.
And you held on and got very big on me. Yes.
I haven't stopped yet, mother. I have not stopped yet.
Okay, we'll leave that one there. So what happened was, and he said I had to stay there. I said, no. The kicker is the first time my husband's going to be allowed to be in the delivery room. They never allowed that.
This was new?
Dad was going to be one of the very few that
normally
just started.
He's out there smoking cigarettes and drinking liquor, as they show you in the cartoons and old movies.
He's pacing the floor. He was always a pacer. So what happened was they said, no, there's no time to go over to Monmouth Medical. I was really mad and hurt and crying. It's got to be born in the same hospital as my son. And then my husband's going into delivery with me. Daddy often joked and said, I think I probably would have passed out. It was just lucky.
So he didn't get to go in at Riverview. Riverview was like, hey, we're not into that new age bullshit they are at that fucking Monmouth hippie medical center.
So
those commie bastards, they want to show you everything, reveal all the goddamn secrets. You know, medicine for not-for-profit bastards.
Okay, we better put him on another show.
You wind up rushing off to Riverview. And that's where I'm born. And you have the Dr. Montserrat working on it.
Deliver you, but I think I was under a little bit.
And he comes out and he's like, "I've never seen a smaller dick on a male baby before." What did he say? You remember the first thing he said to you after he came out?
Dad?
You? No, the doctor.
The doctor. I don't remember. It was Dad because he was out in the waiting room.
And we were waiting for the delivery
to you. And he showed him to you, and he said to me, "I counted. He has 10." You know, the toes and the hand and fingers, and he's got all his parts.
He was looking for the cleft palate and the hair lip, too, no doubt. He was always terrified of that.
I never knew that.
Even when Harley was born, he was scared of that.
Yeah, and he didn't tell me that either.
Until after.
Right.
Yeah.
But with me, when I was delivering Virginia, your sister, I did not know, because we had her over at the convent.
Right.
And after she was delivered, we had her laid on the altar for a blessing, you know.
You mean you had her at the convent? That's where you gave birth?
No, before she was born, I had been over to the convent already. And the funny part was, we're going out the door, and Aunt Virginia said to the nuns, quote unquote, "Sisters, pray that it's a girl, because if it's a boy, it's going to look awful funny running around with the name Virginia."
Right.
You know? She always said that joke.
Because
like,
she wanted
a boy named Sue,
Johnny
Cash.
It's not a very funny joke. Aunt Virginia, not a funny woman.
But she was loving in many other ways.
She was. She was
not
a bucket. She wasn't a bucket of chuckles. No. But you know what? She didn't have to be. Well, she was a cop in Newark.
Woman policeman in the city of Newark, New Jersey.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
First female detective.
That's why she made first female detective, too.
So first female police, like blue?
Yep.
Wearing the blues, and then also the first female detective.
Right.
Good for her.
Like an Angie Dickinson, here I come.
Yeah, she was a big fan of wigs.
And she wore heels like you wouldn't believe.
She wore heels and wigs, like a Dolly Parton wig, and she had giant boobs and smoked
and a lot. Yeah, and she didn't even die of cancer.
No.
Nope.
Oh, my God, she smoked a lot.
Yeah.
She was a chimney.
And
those were in the days where you would smoke right in front of a child.
Yeah.
And fill a room with smoke with children in it.
Isn't it terrible?
No.
Yes, it is.
It just proved for generations that really none of those kids are.
I get it now.
They're all fine. That emphysema is nothing.
So I give birth. Daddy checks you all out and everything like that.
Uh-huh.
And he comes
in. He's not like, put it back. It's not done.
No.
And he comes, can you do anything about this? And they're like, nope. And they're like, all right.
It's a good one. You know. But you were so cute. You even had this little pram that Rosemary made with little animals on and everything like that, a mint green one.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what you come home in. But for some reason or other, believe it or not, your eyes were a little slanted. Did you ever see your baby picture?
Yeah. Donald said that they were like, we all thought you were a Chinese baby.
Right?
Yeah.
I don't know where his sense
long before the Chinese baby adoption thing was in vogue.
50,000 there.
Yeah, it was just like, we all thought you were a Chinese baby.
Because the eyes or something like that. But
so weird. Like, he would have memories of me coming home.
Isn't that something?
I don't have any memories of him coming home, but he would have memories of me coming home,
that's
Virginia,
because you
too.
Were born after him.
Yeah, exactly. But, I mean, it's so weird. He has that over me.
Yeah, isn't that something?
Yeah.
It's that. But, so I guess it wore out or something like that was with the little corners, I guess, or something.
And right.
You know. More days on the face of the earth.
I was looking like better. Joe Pesci in Casino and shit. It looked like I'd had a fucking high heavy tuck in my eyes.
He did do that. But no, so that was our three, and that was the family. Your father and I decided, you know, that was good, wonderful. We had blessed one girl, two boys.
Let me tell you a wonderful memory of Dad that I have that is insanely that. It'll break your heart, but it's a fantastic image. We were not a moneyed family by any stretch of the imagination. Pop probably never made more than 24, 25 through our youth, if that.
Yeah, about
I mean,
that.
I remember well, he when he got out, higher, he was like yeah. 30 or something, yeah, right?
That was it.
That was as high as it ever went?
Well, by his rank and level, he should have been more. He should have been like in the $35,000 bracket.
Right.
But because he wasn't always in attendance at –
yeah,
work.
He took out a lot. That was one of the only points of contentions I ever saw in your relationship, aside from the aforementioned barrette. And then the one time where Uncle Wayne was going to stop by on a Christmas, and
with
we had
girlfriend.
Christmas was done and with a girlfriend and stuff like that. And Christmas had been finished, kind of. Yeah. We were wrapped up for the night, and it was like 9 o'clock. And you're like, why is he coming now? What is this all about? Blah, blah, blah. And you guys got into a kind of back and forth about it. And then Dad – it uttered the immortal phrase, well, blood's thicker than water, Grace. And holy shit, you lit up like you know, like DEFCON 1.
Right.
Like lunged at him and then collected yourself and fucking turned around and stormed the other way. And then all we heard was douche and then slam. And then one of us was, you know, a Dad, I think, followed or tried to follow. Then one of us kind of ventured in to see what had happened. And you, the hallway right outside our bedroom door, me and Donald's bedroom door, just punched the fucking wall so hard right over the light socket and just put your fist through the sheetrock or plaster, whatever it was.
Yeah, no, it was sheetrock.
And it stayed like that until the flood. It was always there, that fucking thing, man. Constant reminder of a fight.
Yeah.
So you guys are in that house, and you, you know, you have this wonderful relationship and you raise these kids that you spend, all your time with and devote your entire lives to them. You know, you guys were never like, we're doing this to get to here. You
we
guys
were
an empire builders.
That
yeah. You
it.
Were,
we
you were totally,
the children.
Yeah.
God,
lived
Daddy
for, not
that.
Through.
Well, for and through later on, as you all had your career, because anything that would have been in Dad's, you know, reach for the stars type thing in his older age or something special to work towards and,
right.
You know, just aim towards that and scrimp and save. But no, his was let's go on vacation.
Yeah, we did that
income
a lot.
And
I've talked
check.
About that
income
on this podcast. Like somehow you guys
put
were
that together.
Really able to like take us to exotic places, places within the continental United States. Considering what he made per year and you didn't work. And like, let's say during this era, you know, granted it's the 70s, but he's earning about 24 to 26 K a year, supporting a wife, himself, and three children.
Going to college, one of them.
Well, no, not at that point. I'm talking in the 70s. Yeah. And still managed every year. We went on a very cool big vacation. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, yeah, granted a lot of times it was Disney World, but always on a plane, which, you know, you got that many people flying. That's fucking expensive. Mm-hmm. We took a train cross country. We drove cross country in a fucking porno van that, you know, I rented from Bernie McRae with the fucking Conan painting on the side. One of these 70s vans with an airbrushed Conan painting on the side with this woman with huge fucking tits holding onto a sword in his leg. And you would see some – we got in a car accident while we were driving because some old fucker was staring at the titty woman on the van.
Florida Turnpike.
Yeah.
Personnel.
And he fucking hit something and he blamed us because – and you were like, I saw you looking at the lady, you little pervert. And he was like, what lady? What lady? I don't know. This is disgusting filth. But we did that. We drove and did that.
It turned out – it turned – turned out. You guys
a van. Five people in a van. You guys are crazy. But it was.
We had the extra seat.
It was a custom van. It wasn't like, you know, we had seats. It was everything. The interior was carpeted.
You got captain chairs.
And had captain chairs that spun, little table you could play cards on and shit. A lot of room.
Yeah.
And the bed you can lay on. Not a bed, but like kind of bench seat. Yeah.
And we had the captain chairs up.
But we would do that. We trained cross country. We were, you know, everywhere. I mean, not everywhere, but all the biggies in the U.S. went to Chicago, Los Angeles, California. Went to
Derby when it was here.
Seattle, Washington, quite a bit. We went to Florida a lot. And I guess those are the biggies. I mean, we went to, like, you know, Niagara Falls once, but Canada was not a big destination. But then we went outside the U.S.
Whoa.
To, like, the Bahamas. Uh-huh. And you got to get back on mic. To the Bahamas and to Bermuda or the – not Bermuda. The Bahamas and the United States Virgin Islands.
Right.
That was cool. Yeah. Like, it was amazing considering that we had no fucking money and you had three kids. And you were able to somehow on 20 fucking – six, let's say, let's be generous and say 30,000, which I know it wasn't during the 70s. On $30,000, you guys managed to like raise three kids, keep a roof over their heads in a house that you owned, with a vacation, if not more than one vacation every year. I mean, phenomenal management of funds.
Income tax return every year. Went straight just for a vacation.
That was for him, right? He was just like, I hate this fucking life so much. I want to go on vacation.
No,
he hated the post office, didn't he?
He did.
He hated it. He didn't want to be there, but he did it because he wanted to pay for his family. So the vacations were a big thing for him, right?
Absolutely.
That was his escape. And when I was like, Grace, like, if I don't do this, I'm going to fucking shoot the post office up. Where's the shotgun?
You would have been one of those.
One of those dudes, yeah. I mean, there was a time where that was in vogue. You couldn't work at the post office without killing somebody. So he made it through, and the way he did it was by going up. Look at that view out there. Come on. You can't – the snapshot of a card you would find in a religious store.
Yes.
Some Bible quote on it, and inside something about how fucking people aren't allowed to take communion.
No, don't get me wrong. I still love my Catholic. Don't get me wrong. I still love my Catholic religion to the degree of where I'm at. If I'm going to be late for Mass anymore, I don't panic. I just go, okay, so I'll miss something. Before, when I was younger, it was always a panic.
Right.
You know, got to get there, got to get the kids on time, got to pick up my mother in time or I'm going to be late. And get there for church. Now, I see it the way I want to see it as a 64-year-old that's been there all my life.
Right.
So I can walk and talk. That, A, I'm ashamed that the knowledge has not been afforded to me sooner until my own children said something, but about the popes in the past, what went on, the feeling I always have, why do they have all those arts and treasures down below the ground, all the other people, when they could be brought to the surface and sold for the benefits of the missionaries and the ones that really need their help.
Right.
Not just looking at something beautiful up at the altar or something beautiful in the Sistine Chapel and everything else like that. I come back to number two, and you see now all these churches being built, and they have still the gold vessels, and gold is, you know, not good, too high price-wise. And things that should be more humble, like the baby was born in the stable of Bethlehem. How much more humble can you get than that? But just take it back to where it belongs.
You're stoned.
No.
Yeah. Yeah, I think you're a little bit stoned.
Tired from the pill, though. My pills, though. That's what does it. No.
You said before that you felt a little bit stoned. You said my face looked weird.
A little bit, yeah.
Your head was swimming a little bit.
Swimming the head, and all of a sudden I looked at you. I had to keep going like this because it was different, your face.
My face was, I'm just getting fatter. Fatter
no,
by the second,
you're not
right in front.
Fatter by the second. Don't even say that.
But it was you think it was the.
No, it was like a little crooked.
Red velvet or the Pineapple Express kicking in?
Oh, yeah. Oh,
and
definitely.
You're like, woo. How'd it feel? Doesn't it feel better than all that fucking
it's
shit?
It's going
you
around
take?
And around, but the only thing that scares me is my ability to walk to the bathroom without.
You're off the mic. Without what?
No, without getting a little lopsided. I thought I saw something on there.
Take you are stoned. You're touching the things that don't exist.
No, there's one here and there's one there.
What?
For a minute. The smudge on your
cut. It's all right. Don't worry about the smudge.
It's cut. Anyhow, back to where I was protesting the church.
Mm-hmm.
I always wanted to serve on the altar.
Yeah.
Never could. It was
they
like
won't let you.
It would be a major.
And they
major
want you.
Sin.
You're a heart player.
Yeah, more,
you know,
major,
you're not
major
a paycheck
sin.
Player. You're a heart player.
Now I go back, and they got girls on the altar. They got girls on the altar down in Florida.
Yep.
They got girls on the altar wherever I go anymore, and it's just like, wow, I wanted to, you know, worked in whatever politics for that right. privilege back then. So now I became a Eucharistic minister, but it's not the same.
No, because you wanted it back then, yep. and now you got it now, and it's different. Mm-hmm. No, it's also not the same as being a priest. Yeah. You want to be a priest, you're talking about.
No, I played that role one time already on my mother.
You guys are in this house.
Yep, 31 years, I believe.
No, you know what? Let's finish. Okay. Let me go back. We never even finished the story about how we got to hit. We definitely hit two stories and then and then wrap this up, because I could do this for hours and hours, but there's so much life to cover. And we've already done two massive bunches of it.
And it's so funny looking at Kevin sitting there with his eyes half closed, and we're looking eye to eye for the first time in a long time, though.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And his eyes aren't getting half closed.
Yeah, but I'm not sleepy at all. It's more
that's
relaxed
good.
That
yeah,
way.
Yeah, that's what it is.
I'm like, why are they open so much? It takes too much effort. What am I looking for? Everything I need is right here.
Right.
Just relax.
Just relax now.
That was funny. But but we'll have to have you come back out, and because this has been fun. Did you have fun?
A lot of fun.
Oh, I enjoy this.
I don't know what everybody else thinks outside, because I haven't seen this for 5 hours.
Right. Everyone else outside is just like, oh my God, he converted Grace. Oh, she's stoned it. She's back, bitch. No, but we'll have to have you come out and talk more, because I realize we can't cover my entire life, and in the future we'll be able. We haven't even scratched the surface.
And some of the
but there are two
things.
Two that I want to hit, because we touched on them and didn't finish. Mm-hmm. One was when I almost killed Dad in Canada.
Yeah.
We never really finished. We were in a pool, and
at
he
the
was
Karen Croft Motel.
What is that? What is Karen Croft? Is that a name?
That's a name. Canadian name. French Canadian name. Mm-hmm.
Where is this? Montreal, Toronto, Niagara Falls?
Niagara Falls side.
Mm-hmm. So you went to go up to Niagara Falls as kind of second honeymoon of sorts, bring your kids this time around.
Yeah,
you hadn't been back
like
there in a while. Whose idea was it?
Dad's and mine.
Whenever
we pick
a vacation, ride and go, and and really, that was his code again for like, let's go fuck someplace exotic, and the kids can come too. We're in the pool. How old am I?
You probably would have been about seven. Eight.
I have no concept of life and death. Apparently, I'm on his shoulders in the pool, holding on to the edge of the pool, and we're going around it. And he'll go down, and then he'll get up and get air, and then go down and you know spider across the wall, and then get up, get air, and go back down. As we got to the deep end, like, you know, I couldn't sit on his shoulders because I would go underwater myself. So I began standing on his shoulders. Unbelievably, picture me standing on my father's shoulders and somehow being able to lift himself back up out of the water and me to get a lung full of air. And for some reason, it occurred to me as funny to be like, well, I'm going to hold him down there this time. So I grab onto the ledge of the pool and just
purposely.
Yeah, and just rock, but not thinking of the consequence at all. It was just like horseplay. That's how I think about that now, and I go, children are terrifying.
Yeah.
They have no concept of gravity, of consequence, life and death. And I'm holding on to the edge of the pool, holding him down, and he's, you know, shifting around, and I'm like, ha, 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 ha. It's like a rodeo ride.
I think it was Donald and Virginia are on the second floor by the hotel room with me, and they start, you know, mom. And I said, what's the matter? Kevin.
mom, what's the matter? Kevin's killing Dad. What? Again? What a weird thing to hear from your two children. Mom, your third son, the one who lived after the one who died and the other one who died, he's trying to kill Dad. He killed two children on either side of him, and now he's going for your father. He's the bad, our father, your husband, he's the bad seed, Mom. There's a 666 in his head, Mom, and he's trying to kill Father now. Stop it, Mom. Did they call it out? Were they in the pool? Why didn't they stop it? They're like, we ain't going near him in case Tubby jumps on us and starts fucking pushing us under the water as well.
And then the worst part of all is I can't swim, and they were calling me to go help him.
Get out of here.
About it. I couldn't swim. No, what happened was they're nodding me at the door, Virginia and Donald, and I said, I thought you were going downstairs.
It didn't occur to anybody to just be like,
I said,
hey, fatso, get off your father. You're killing him here in Canada. In the Karen Carpenter Hotel. Or the Karen Croft Hotel. Chris Croft Hotel. The Chris Crosses Hotel, man. You're sailing, all right? Sailing right into the grave. You're killing your father. When you get caught between the moon and the grave and the morgue, because you're killing your only father. It was so weird. I don't know what came over me, man. Like, I just...
Oh my God.
In that moment, I really learned about the consequence of life and death that fucking moment, because he got out of the water and he was just like, he looked at me like he backed away from me, you know, not like, you fucking dumbass. He was just like, oh my God, he literally tried to kill me. I got to keep an eye on the fat one. The girl and the gay one are fine, but the fat one's a killer. Right. He's got hate in his heart. Yeah, I do remember distinctly just being like, I'm gonna hold him down, but not thinking, oh, he could drown. Just thinking like, ha 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 ha, this is fun, and he'll push me off. He didn't push me off.
But he didn't push you off. I mean, that's what Donald
and I'm telling you, I was like straight legged, pushing from the bottom of the rim ledge of the pool. You know, I'm a young kid at this point.
Yeah.
I might have been at Canada. I think I'm six or seven at this point. I was thinking, I got confused with 10 when we went to, remember when we went to the islands? I guess it was Virgin Islands, and him and I were in the ocean for hours and hours, and he lost his glasses and shit.
Yeah.
We were getting killed by waves. It was awesome.
Really?
Yeah. Just having a blast.
You and him,
blast.
Donald didn't go out.
It was just me and Dad.
Well.
And he lost his glasses. That was the bummer. We had such a great time at the very end. He was like, ah, oh, shit. And then, you know, he's like, go look for him. I'm like, in the ocean? I mean, fuck you, old man. You look for him. There are sharks out there. And he's like, yeah, but there could be treasure. Well, you try again. He's like, a sandwich. I'm like, all right, get out of my way. So no, at 6 years old, yeah, I think six.
Kevin does the best impersonations of his father, that he cracks his brother
like
up so bad.
You never
not
sound
to sound like your dad, but
my impression of my father, he's such a fucking like Christ. He's basically Darren McGavin in Christmas Story, with way louder, turned up to 11. But he wasn't that good at all. But I did almost kill him. He fucking looked at me terrified after that for a few hours. What were you thinking? And I was like, he's spitting up water and shit. I was like, huh? What's the matter here? He was literally, you could see in his eyes, he was like, I can't believe I have to have the, if you hold someone underwater, they will die discussion with this dumbass. Christ, they're not teaching him anything. $500 a year tuition, no wonder he's good education. He killed me almost. They don't teach him in the school, Grace, that he could kill a man with his fat ass. Spend an extra $200, send him to fucking modern day, would you? At old lady's piss house, he's not getting the message. He may know a lot about Joseph and Mary, but he don't know shit about practicality. They're like, don't drown your father. I knew we should have stopped at the second one. I knew it.
Yep. Oh, God.
That was weird. I literally almost killed him, man.
Did you ever tell Virginia and Donald that?
They were there.
No,
I mean,
up on the
a part of me thinks that they were there going like, let's just see what happens. Let's look, I like him, but if it happens, it happens. We didn't do it. You know, we didn't kill him. We just didn't stop Kevin from killing him, okay? He was treated like Ra's al Ghul, and they were the Dark Knight. Like, I'm not going to kill him. I'm just not going to stop the fat one from killing him.
No, walking aside. And the two were up there.
What were we doing? It was for the Niagara Falls. You just wanted to go up
stayed
there.
Over. Trip. Because we were up there for about 2 days in the camp.
We went on a helicopter, I believe.
Oh, is that why you repeated it?
Yeah. I told that story about us being in a helicopter.
Yeah. Dad said, well, that's okay. You know, they can go over and lock them down, you know, and everything.
Let us go, I believe. Yeah, three kids went in a helicopter with a total stranger. And I was convinced later in life that Dad was like, all right, Grace, let's go in the bathroom and fucking glory hole it. Get in the bathroom and do me dirty, woman. Oh, I just set my kids up in a fucking whirly bird with a stranger. You got 5 minutes. Open up. I remember that. Canada was Niagara Falls was nice.
Pretend he's not saying all that.
Niagara Falls barely, I mean, I hate to say this, but it just doesn't, it feels more America than Canada because it's so, I mean, the real Canada, man, you know, you get up to Edmonton.
Yeah, and really see the stuff.
And Ontario. That matters. And Kitchener and all these,
see,
Vancouver.
Yeah, all them up there.
The Peg.
You ever see a lot of deer?
Deer?
Yeah. Deer going by or anything?
A random
up there?
Question. Where? In Canada?
Yeah. In Canada.
Yeah. Every time I go up, there are mooses. I get greeted by mooses when I get off the plane. When you
That's
get off
mooses.
The plane, there is no walkway, Ma.
No?
You step down, you get onto the back of a moose. It trudges through about 2 miles of snow where you pick up your bag. A Mountie escorts you to your fucking covered wagon. Bob and Doug McKenzie are the in-flight entertainment. No, it's just like here. It's just there. You know, it's not like, what's it like in the frozen wasteland of Ontario?
I've
seen some wildlife up there, sure. I mean, I saw a moose up in Alaska, but that's here in the States, technically.
Where'd you go Moose go?
To speak at a school once. Really? And I was like, they see moose all the time, but I was like, somebody was like, hey, man, I just came in, and there's a moose in the parking lot. I was like, get the fuck out of here. And they swung open the doors, and there was a moose just chilling out. The show stopped. Did it? Came to a complete halt because I was just like, does anybody see this? Does anybody see the fucking moose in the parking lot? Oh, my God, it's Bullwinkle. I was so delighted. Simple. You know, Highlands, we didn't have any moose. Nice. The other story I do want to talk about before we wrap this session up.
I forgot it now. What was it?
is when we shoplifted. I think I've told that on a Smodcast. Basically, this was weird. We were a family that went out to eat all the time. And we would go out to eat to Perkins all the time. And like for a family that, again, you know, I've said it before, all credit is due. Balance 5 people, 3 kids, 2 adults on 30,000 tops. And I know it wasn't that. Still take us on vacations and fucking, you know, put us in private school, essentially. Astounding. It was budgeted insanely well. I couldn't do that. I couldn't make that work. Not in a million years in this day and age. So we go out to eat all the time too. We go to Shrewsbury to Mr. Steak a lot. Mr. Steak was this joint where you would go and they served they were okay. It wasn't like going to a Ruth's Chris or a fucking Morton's. It was, you know, fast food steak place, like a Steak and Shake kind of thing. Mm-hmm. But you actually sat down and it had booths and stuff. And the mashed potatoes, where I fell in love with mashed potatoes. Mashed potatoes are so good. But that was where Mom put Mr. Steak out of business by monopolizing the free birthday cakes. That was a new thing, you know, in American restaurants. People were like, tell us if it's your birthday. And if it is, we will bring a cake to your table and sing to you. And we were like, what the fuck? Free fucking cake? Hey, guess what? It's my birthday every day, motherfucker. Every time we went to this fucking place. It was somebody's birthday over and over again. And so, you know, we'd be eating and you'd pull the waitress or waiter over and be like, it's my boy's birthday today. And, oh, we'll bring the cake right over. We'll bring a cake. And they'd bring a cake over and a couple of waiters and sing the happy birthday song. It was lovely, like large. It looked like an Entenmann's cake that you pull out of Pepperidge Farm cake that you pull out of a box.
Oh, that was worth it.
Like a nice chunk fuck of a cake. And they wouldn't charge you for it. And I believe, I may not be correct, but I believe if it was your birthday, they knocked a little bit off your meal. The kid got a free meal. So
he had all the extra.
And you were just like, oh, yeah, it's totally his birthday. You bring a cake and don't charge us for his food, his very hearty portion. And so, boom, all of a sudden, we are enjoying some free fucking cake at Mr. Steak. Lo and behold, 2 years later, we're driving past Mr. Steak, gone. Gone forever, out of business, Mr. Steak. And I gotta believe it had something to do with the volume of, because you know, we walked through the doors and they were like, lady, it was the fat one's birthday 3 times this week. I mean, you fool me once, shame on you. Fool me
twice,
fucking 19 times now. Shame on me. Mr. Steak Corporation for allowing this charade to fucking run us out of business. There was a lot of Mr. Steak fucking cake eating and shit. Then taking cakes home. I literally remember one time you going, it's talking the waiter into giving us a second cake because we were going to celebrate at home. With their grandparents. And the poor waiter being like, I guess. And I guarantee you weren't 50% dippers like I am. This poor motherfucker is like 7%. I gave him two free cakes. 20. Were you 20 back then?
Well, no. I guess it
circa 1975, 78?
No, had he brought maybe 10%.
That motherfucker was lucky to get 50 cents. He gave you like the farm, 2 cakes, and put the Mr. Steak Corporation out of business. Here's your 2 bits, servant boy. Thanks for helping me break the bank of corporate America. Mr. Steak made some excellent mashed potatoes. Anyway, Mr. Steak was a place we'd eat a lot. But we also eat at Perkins Pancake House, and that was in Shrewsbury. And you would go from we would take the ride along the Seabright Wall. Mm-hmm. We turn right at the bridge over by Rumson by Holy Cross. I believe it's called Holy Cross.
Right.
Pass Holy Cross. And it's so cute. You just joined in on that. The recorder went down. We already told this story once, and I'm having to retell it. And, you know, I played it for as if I don't know it's Holy Cross, just to maintain the flow of the story. And you, without missing a beat, so beautifully, were like, right, even though you knew I know that. Because we just did that, the whole thing. You fucking lied to the audience with me. You bought into it. And in that moment, you're like, subterfuge. We're going to lie to all these fucking fools and pretend we haven't had this conversation 10 minutes ago before the gear crapped out.
kicked me like this in the brain. I said, God, this is exactly what we said. I think
you're like, I must be stoned. We're having the same fucking conversation. I remember talking about Mr. Stiggs. I was blue in the face. He loves Mr. Steak. Is that what this show's about? Steakcast? He just talks about Mr. Steak and what happened to it and how we fucked him over. And I wish there were more Mr. Steaks and oh, those mashed potatoes. I don't understand why you're so popular, Kevin. Mr. Steak's long gone. So we would go across the by Holy Cross, and then over by that was really funny, and over by by the Methodist Church where the graveyard is, by the Seventh Day Adventist Church where Sam Holland used to go, and I went to that one mass where the fucking girl was like, Jesus is better than any sex mass, one crazy singing snake handling service. You get up to the light, you make a left, and then fucking a quarter mile up on the right is Perkins,
right.
To the left is the Monmouth County Library.
Now, Sycamore, right.
Is it Sycamore? No, that's not Sycamore. Mm-hmm. That whole strip is called Sycamore?
You're going from
that main drag.
Little Silver?
In front of, yeah, and Little Silver, and it goes through to Eatontown.
Across. No, I'm saying across from the water.
Yeah, no, I'm talking about the where the church is.
Oh, I got it now. I remember.
Yeah, you know what I'm saying? By Shrewsbury, mm-hmm. We make the turn. And Perkins, we would go to Perkins.
Yeah.
Quite a bit. So
Sunday, at least.
Every Sunday, yeah. For breakfast, we would go out every Sunday for breakfast. I used to love, I missed so much, and I'm trying to replicate this year. Me and Jennifer went to Palm Springs for Zach and Molly's wedding. And at the place we stayed, they, bring you breakfast, and we ate on our lanai. Mm-hmm. And it was so nice. Because we don't do that, because generally I wake up, come down here, blaze the fuck up. She gets up. After me, because I wake up at like 3-4 in the morning. She gets up, deals with Harley, and makes her lunch, gets her off to school, and I say goodbye to Harley. Mm-hmm. And then, she needs time to wake up and drink coffee and shit. She doesn't want to be, because I'm pestered, because I've already been up for hours, smoking lots of weed. So I'm like, let's fuck. And she's like, it is fucking 7:20. Kid hasn't gone to school. I haven't drank my coffee. Get out of here. That's pretty much the average morning. But, yeah.
Oh, no.
Oh, shit. All right. Yeah. Okay. Thanks, Gail. Bye. What were we talking about? I used to love. I mean, I can make it myself, too. But, and I do that every morning now. I fucking make eggs. But I'm looking for somebody else to make breakfast.
Right. Good, healthy.
I remember we would do that all the time, make breakfast and sit out on a porch.
Our porch. I was going to say that.
Sunday mornings we would do that. We didn't always go to Perkins for breakfast
on Sunday
after church, but we would do it there. And you put on the music. Like, I got a whole playlist on my iPod, which is just mom and dad music. It's all the music that's reminiscent of like what you put on the fucking hi-fi with like a Barbara Streisand singing with Barry Gibb all the time. And you used to play that. And make eggs, and we'd sit out on the porch and all sit around the table. And God, it's just, our whole lives were fun. It's just a wonderful time, wonderful memory.
Yeah, we picked that mostly the place for talking about new vacation.
Yeah, that was the family planning meetings and shit like that. We're going here, and not like we had a say.
We figured it out, but we took Nicholas over to Perkins one Sunday with us. Nicholas Kubanoff, Donald's friend,
No, but one thing I used to do at fucking Perkins all the time suck up fucking butter balls, remember?
Shecky! Shecky!
Is a pancake joint.
Yeah.
So I give you those little paper cups with butter balls in them and shit. And it was this is back when you would feed butter to a child. Lots of it.
Right.
And so everybody got pancakes at the pancake house and shit, but not everyone would use their butter. And everyone that didn't, or use a little, would then pass them over to me. So you got four people handing one kid butter balls. And each order of pancakes coming with it. And I would sit there and be like, and these are healthy butter balls. These are the size of this is the size of two human testicles smushed together really tightly.
Donald talks about that one day. He was saying,
totally. There was so much butter thrown my way. And it was like, it was considered like, oh, yeah, give him the butter. He loves it. Watch him eat the butter. Watch this freak show. Look at him suck the butter up. He's a butter whore. But anyway, so we would eat at Perkins a lot, and it was great. And then at Perkins would be where if I went to the dentist and got fillings, and I did because I've always poorly taken care of my teeth. If I got fillings or drillings or whatever, you would take me to Perkins afterwards, and then you would buy me one of these little plastic,
like a
Yosemite Sam or Bugs Bunny or a Daffy Duck or I had a Popeye one. There was an olive oil one, which is strange for a boy to have a girl doll. But, you know, you couldn't have Popeye without olive oil.
Right.
Who was going to fuck on my shelves when I was asleep at night? So when the toys come to life. So we would go there quite a bit. On this particular day, when was it? Halloween or Christmassy time? I want to say Halloween because it wasn't too cold out and it felt like fall.
Yeah.
But at the same time, it would make more sense that if it was around Christmas, because it was people would have been getting new shit and throwing out their old shit.
Yes, I guess, yeah, that's right.
So I'm not sure, but I still identify it as being around Halloween for some reason. Okay. We're coming home from Perkins. We're driving through Rumson. This was an amazing day, which as a child captures your imagination. You're like, it should always be like this. And it never happened again. I don't know what you guys, maybe you guys were stoned or drunk. We're driving home. Rumson, very rich area of where we grew up. And people, it's a garbage night. And for some reason, people are throwing out some really good garbage over in Rumson, I guess you guys decided.
Sunday night, usually.
It wasn't like, you know, dirty diapers and shit like that. It was like a lot of toys, baskets of toys being thrown out and fucking, you know, toaster ovens and fucking just like small appliances and shit that, like, you know, I'll be honest with you, lived in our house for years. But anyway, we're driving around and we pull up and you guys are like, go ahead, grab some stuff. And we're like, you're kidding. And maybe the other two are like, you're kidding. But I was like, you're kidding. This is great. Christmas is here so soon. And Virginia and Donald, who were like, you know, tweens or early teens, were like, are you seriously urging us to go pick through the people's garbage in Rumson? Like, we don't have enough of an identity problem being from Highlands and these rich people in Rumson, these rich fucking motherfuckers and all they have. And you want us to go pick through their leavings? And you've got the little one excited about it. And when I say little, I put up air quotes because look at him. He sucks butter down like a turkey. We got out. We start grabbing shit.
We did?
Yeah, totally. We did. You guys sat in the car probably laughing your asses off. But all three of us, I mean, one of us very excitedly. The other two probably like, huh, I guess I better dutifully grab some trash or else I'm going to get yelled at. We go out grabbing armfuls of shit up and down the fucking, what's that street in front of Holy Cross? Rumson Road. Up and down fucking Rumson Road. I mean, to give you the lay of the land. Yeah, Shicky's like, I want to get out. She's throwing things around, cackling, and I hear that she's fucking digging through garbage. That would make Shiggy gravitate toward you. Shiggy's a shit eater. So she's like, hey, I'm all with you. Nothing wrong with leavings, Grace. Nothing wrong with leavings. One man's trash is another man's treasure. And my God, was it. For a good hour, up and down Rumson Road. To give you a lay of the land, Bruce Springsteen lives near there. You know what I'm saying? Now, back then he didn't. But rich people, I wound up living over there. Years later, I bought a house. So we're grabbing stuff, and at one point, cars pulled over. There's the three of us, me, Virginia, and Donald, crawling over a mound of trash like fucking Jawas in Star Wars, trying to find, look for scrap metal and shit. The sandcrawler parked with you guys sitting in it going, come on! These fuckers drive by us out of nowhere. It's some teenagers, man, and they yell, garbage pickers! And at that point, even I was just like, oh, wait a second. This is not socially acceptable, is it? This is tantamount to, we are human roaches at this point, aren't we? I was having so much fun until reality came crashing in. But I played with a lot of those toys. I mean, I had a fucking Joker Mego doll for years. I finally got a Joker Mego doll. Never got a Batcave, but we had to pick through some rich man's fucking leavings. Some spoiled rich bastard in Rumson who threw out a perfectly good Joker figure, and I fucking I loved it for years.
Oh, God.
But it's what possessed you? Do you even think? I mean, can you remember that day?
Yeah, I think Cousin Juju was actually with us.
No.
No?
It was the nuclear family. Yeah, nobody else was allowed in on our shame.
I thought you did it one time with me in Rumson Road, though.
That was the only time it ever happened. I remember being a kid and being like, oh, God, that you got to get closer to the mic. Get further with
them. You're right. I remember them coming by and then yelling, garbage pickers.
Totally. And I just remember going like, I hope this happens.
Oh, no.
Yeah, you're like, all right, Tom, let's go. And he's like, it was fun while it lasted. Well, I'll take care of Christmas at least.
Oh, God.
They got some shit. Ain't nothing wrong. Yeah, fuck those garbage pickers. We're smart. Well, who throws this out? The idiots are the people who throw out this good garbage.
Right. And my garbage men are very rich because they do that, right?
I mean, I don't... Shecky! I don't... I'm certainly not painting a bleak portrait, but I don't remember any warnings of... You know, beware of shitty diapers and medical waste. I mean, we were literally digging through garbage cans.
Right. You were safer then you'll ever be.
Totally. Yeah. But good times, man. I loved it. I wouldn't trade it for the world. All form of substance. Shecky, I'm going to break your fucking spine.
Oh, no, he won't.
That right over my knee. Ka-snap. And you're going to wear a full body cast. Eat it. And I'm going to sign your body cast. Ha ha. Love, Dad. Sure. Yeah, all formative stuff without which I wouldn't be who I am. It certainly, you know, made me who I am today. I honestly still to this day don't feel like, look, make a lot of money and drive, you know, live in a really big house, drive a nice car, and I have respect in my field and out and outside of it. Every once in a while I drive past some garbage and I'm like, that's too good to be thrown out. I got to swing back. You know, I feel the old fucking feeling.
It's coming back on again, huh?
Totally. Right, it's just like, why would someone throw that out?
Right.
And then I just have to go like, no, just go buy a new one. But, you know, there is a part. One day I'm actually going to stop, get out of the car, fucking, you know, pull some goddamn Mego Batcave that somebody finally fucking threw out, doesn't know the value of it. I'm like, holy shit. I'll be lugging in the car and somebody been like, Silent Wait. Bob's a garbage picker.
Oh, man. That would really come back in folds of memories.
Have you enjoyed it? You enjoyed this podcast?
Yes,
it's fun, isn't it?
So.
That's God, pretty much what we do all the time.
I think we just got lost in another world.
Yeah, that's what you do.
By now.
You too. You get really stoned, you get lost in another world, and you take huge trips down memory lane. And for some reason, people find it interesting to listen to. And I'm delighted by that because I'm glad to have a record of it. Mm. You know, it's nice to have a...
Oh, that's most important.
People don't do that. People don't, you know, people preserve photographs as their memories, but... People don't really do the whole, the oral tradition handing down is not in practice anymore. And this is a kind of a way of doing that, an oral record history. I mean, my dream project in addition to Smodcast is Highlands of People's History, where basically me and Brian Johnson try to tell the entire story of Highlands from the moment we're born until the moment we leave, or in his case, leave and come back.
Wow, really? So,
yeah, I would love to do that. Like try to remember everything. It's an ambitious project, but try to remember everything. You know what I'm saying? Like, you know, and throughout some podcast, just everything from everything from like the furthest back memory. Like I remember being in the crib and trying to get out of the crib and being able to climb out of the crib to play on the floor with some stuff. And I'm playing on the floor with this Fisher Price thing. You put the shapes into it and had wheels and a plastic pole string. Virginia comes into the kitchen because that's where I was playing. And puts me back into the fucking crib. And I was like, you treacherous bitch. That's why I threw her under the bus for the Blue Oyster Cult. Because she threw me back in jail. I made it out. I was free. And then she lifted me up, put me back. I'm like, you're my sister. You're supposed to get my back. Well, I love you to death. Thank you for doing this. I've had so much fun. This is the most fun I've had with you. And I can't tell you how long. But so much fun in general, period. Nice to, really to cool. sit around and. Be able to talk to your mother, not only as your mother, but as a friend, as a peer, contemporary. We're both adults, but you'll always be older. But
true,
it's nice to have that kind of relationship. And I hope you keep coming out and doing more because there's so much ground to cover.
Thank you.
Including the moment when you were like, oh, my God, his dick is small. You know, and how you were like, how is he going to deal with this, Don? And that's why you guys equipped me for all this life because you're like, he's got to make up for this massive deficit. You know, he better do something else. Oh, God. Okay, well, that is – I've had a blast. This is instantly one of my top 10 favorites. That is smart.
Thank you. Thank you
for doing it, Ma. Thanks for being here. And thank you for having me. And thank you for being – for fucking Dad. It's important. It's
making
important.
Love,
making love. Making love after the dead one too, you know, because you might have been like, look, forget it. After that, I'm heartbroken and shit. But still – he was desperate and dirty enough to be like, we're doing it again. I don't care about your heartbreak. And then that one worked. That one popped.
That one did work.
We didn't talk about the other one. What happened there? Just
it was a short one. It was
really
a short
quick.
Miscarriage, yeah.
There were no TV involved in that one. You were like, well, we wanted a VCR.
No.
So I lost another kid.
But the VCR was $75.
It's now dark, and it's like, I think the whole family outside.
Yeah, it's as dark as a fucking joke. It is as dark as this room is a joke.
We've disappeared by now.
That is my guest for this week. I'm Kevin Smith.
And I'm Mom Smith, Grace.
Have a week.
God bless. Take care.